enjoying the music. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson is with me, I think. Sign in, Tony.
Hello, Tony Martin.
We're filling in for Derek Gill, if you're just joining us. He's doing the conversation hour in the morning, so we've been charged with his fine program, The Quiz. I'm not sure if that's been up to scratch over the last 2 weeks, so a professional will be joining us tonight, Pete Smith.
Has he ever done it before?
I'm not sure if Pete has ever supervised this particular quiz, but he's been doing quizzes for the last 75 years, so it's going to be professionally handled for once. Tracy Harvey is going to be with us, and much later on, Mary Jane Fenwick as well. So it's a full bench, and we'll be talking disgraceful behaviour. There's been a lot of it in the media. I don't know if you've read the papers today, Tony.
So dust off your I got kicked out of stories and give them to us.
We want to hear them next.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right. Good evening, everybody. Us again. Derek Gill still holding down the fort on the Conversation Hour. And I think we heard during the news what the topic of the day is, Tony.
Disgrace.
Disgrace. Footballers behaving disgracefully, as they do.
We have this topic as a fallback about every 3 days you can run it. But certainly today is no exception.
We're certainly not condoning that sort of behaviour, but there's a lot of it about. And, you know, in the small paper, as I've been told to call it, there's a sentence today that I think is my sentence of the week. It's like a beautiful poem, this sentence. Listen to this. Favola was seen on the balcony at the River Room where the after party was held, smoking cigarettes in the rain and vomiting. Isn't that beautiful?
Because it sounds a little bit like Humphrey Bogart. You could have Humphrey Bogart as the subject of that sentence until the last two words, couldn't you?
And vomiting.
The rain, the smoking, the balcony, but not so much the vomit.
And, of course, the papers are full of, the segment that he'd shot for the footy show, Cannot Go To Where. What was the guts of that segment? As I understand it, he was running up to people, simulating sex.
He did the lean in on Rebecca Twigley.
Right. He was also swearing, says there was a lot of swearing involved.
Singing, I believe.
Singing, knocked a full bottle of beer out of somebody's hand that went flying into a crowd. Puckered up for some unsuspecting wags and bystanders. And then there's a bit of dialogue in the paper today. Brendan, I'm telling you, stop drinking, his wife said. But I just did street talk, Favola slurred. Oh yeah, that went really well, replied the missus. Now, the whole thing is, you know, Channel 9 is saying we can't put this to air.
And the poor wife, she's 6 months pregnant, so presumably isn't hitting it hard. Because you would just want to deaden the experience a little yourself by, you know, going a quarter of the way with him. But sounds like she's standing on an island that night, but Mrs. Favola.
I'm saying put the segment to air. This is the first street talk I've wanted to see for 10 years.
Surely there'll be a rough cut on the internet.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. But, we certainly can't condone that sort of behaviour, smoking a cigarette in the rain and vomiting.
It's not only footballers, though.
No, it's policemen. Policemen up north, 5 Queensland police officers involved in a series of nude dashes through suburban streets have been stood down pending an investigation. There's the Blue Murder miniseries I want to see.
Nudie runs. So were they derobing police clobber? So were they all in police gear, then the police gear went in a pile and they went on a nudie run, or were they in civvies?
What you've said is how I'm picturing it, but it says the Courier-Mail reports the Ethical Standards Command,
they're
getting involved, is looking at a complaint. The officers were seen running naked around a police minibus used to transport them to a Bucks party cruise on Morton Bay. Now, I don't know if they're off duty there.
Sounds off duty. It's a shame because I like the idea of the blues going under a bush somewhere and then possibly some, stealing, of course, the stealing of clothes whilst nudie runs are going on is a long tradition. I've been done by that.
Have you, really?
Yeah. We're going to get to this, actually.
We are definitely going to get to you. But I'd just like to point out another one which has been handed to me by Lisa, who's producing the show today. I'm afraid John Standish, still at home.
Sick.
under the effects of something.
I think you would have given it to him. That's really? What's going to end up being
but
proven.
But I was careful not to breathe or touch anybody during my condition. I hope it's not me. Sorry about that, John, but everything's going fine in here. Everything's up on the screen. I haven't mentioned any product names. Don't panic. This one here in news.com.au's official website, I want to point out that this is on official letterhead. Jason Ackermanis, the pirate, too drunk for Brownlows. Notice that word, Brownlows.
Does it really say
it
that?
It says Brownlows.
Is that because he was seeing two of them? I think that's probably the case. That's because, of course, Tony Martin stunned the listener here at 774.
Oh, I did. The listener was very confused and angry
when he said, "Now what's going on at the Brownlows tonight?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Look, unlike television and film award shows, the Brownlow is proudly singular."
Yeah. Well, I think you're wrong.
It's incredible.
Look at that. See,
I think it's actually an effort by the headline writers at the Herald Sun. I would say it's an act of defiance where another anti-football person like yourself is trying to undermine the correct use of Brownlow and made it plural.
Well, it's a sad story because the Pirates' missus is all dolled up, ready to go to the Brownlows, and he was so drunk he couldn't even leave the house, too drunk to attend.
He said, "We're staying in.
When
watching it on telly, let's see how Sandy goes."
Not in a state to be seen in public, other words here. So there's a lot of it about. That's what we're saying. There is a lot of it about. It's not to be condoned, as I keep saying, because I'm aware that this is the ABC and standards must be maintained.
So these stories have to be accompanied by a booze and round condemnation, don't they really?
They do. Because when you say stories, it is your chance to fess up. Because we've all done a bit of this, haven't we? We've not all shown up at the Brownlows drunk, but...
We mentioned last night on the show, or was it two nights ago? I finished reading A Nest of Occasionals, Tony's new book, and there's a story in that...
Yeah.
..which talks about an entire night blacked out of your memory...
Yeah.
..where you became known as... Swear guy.
Yeah, I was. Well, I was 21 and this was in the mid-80s and I have told this story a few times before, but it's certainly never been told as graphically as it is in the book. I attended an awards show and as 21, as I say, I'd never been to a casino. We didn't have those in New Zealand. I'd never experienced the concept of free drinks before. Remember the first time you had a free drink somewhere?
Yes.
And you go, "Hang on, so I can have another one?" And, yeah, I got up on stage and my behaviour was appalling. I've been apologising for this behaviour for 25 years. But it's one of those things where it becomes more and more exaggerated. So eventually a radio announcer came back from Queensland and said, "I heard you punched out Billy J. Smith," who was comparing the Goldies that year, "and set fire to Wickety Whack," who were a sort of group of close harmony musical parodists who used to dress up as the Village People. Now, how do you set fire to a whole band? Did I have a flaming torch? Did I have some diesel with me on the podium? I don't understand, but I don't remember setting fire to anyone. Certainly didn't punch anybody up, but I did let fly with some very blue language, and there was a reason for it. I was provoked. Because one of the awards we won...
You were called a plagiarist.
Yeah, my producer was called a plagiarist, and I went to his defence using...
colourful language.
Using what...
That you thought Queenslanders would understand. A Queenslander like Kevin Rudd might call robust...
Robust
discussion.
Language. That's right. It was a bit too robust for a 1985 crowd. And, so that was disgraceful. But I've never really done that again. See, I think I learnt my lesson on that night. Probably people who know me are sitting at home going, "You've forgotten this one."
Well, I've got a confession, this really is. It does go in this direction.
Well, can I just say that 7 minutes before we went to air, I heard you call your wife and go, "Now, there aren't any stories." And then I hear a long pause and you hear you going, "Yeah, right, this is that one. Yeah, I don't know if I can say that one on the air." Sounds like there's quite a roster for you.
I think there are a couple. There's one. I was at a wedding at a very zhuzhy place in Glenferrie Road, a reception centre. Tam said, when I asked, "Have I ever disgraced myself?" She said, "Oh, what about that time where you, it was a daytime wedding, so people generally weren't drunk. People don't normally latch onto the free booze at a daytime wedding as much as they might at a nighttime one. But Tam says, I was the exception at that function, and it involved me dropping a beer on a hard floor
right
next to the mother of the bride's leg,
right,
and that it splashed all up her stocking,
right,
and she took a step back and gave me a look of utter disdain, a favola glare, I'd say, and that I became, you know, like the disgrace of the wedding.
Right, and how did you sort of make up for that? Because when I did the thing at the awards,
I didn't know it was that bad until 10 minutes ago.
See, I was forced to write handwritten apologies to everybody who was at the awards, and it was like, you know, a full casino, so that was a fair bit of writing. You must have, I mean, fairly minor, Tony, surely.
Well, I've told a lot of people that I've jumped into the Yarra as part of a Birdman rally, but one thing I've never admitted to is that I've done a 12:30 trip into the Yarra at middle of the night, jump off the Swan Street Bridge.
Really?
Drunk. Not condoning this behaviour. No. This is a disgraceful behaviour.
Up on the screen, I'm being reminded we do not condone this behaviour. Alcohol abuse is not a good thing, and, you know, people should drink in moderation. We just want to talk about some of your embarrassing experiences and perhaps how you've had to apologise and make up for your outrages.
And perhaps the worst of all for me, and this really I was shaking my head before the show saying, I am absolutely disgusted by the fact that I was involved in this one. But basically, in my school in year 10, there was a situation where a whole lot of boys were sitting with their shirts off on the oval, and a quite attractive teacher at all boys school. She came over and said, "Put your shirts on." Not unreasonably.
No.
Very hot day.
Mm.
And one of the boys said, very naughtily, not me, "Why don't you take your shirt off?"
Oh dear, there's no call for that.
She laughs and says, "You did windsurfing, Anthony. You've seen me with my shirt off."
So hang on.
Flirty back.
Hello.
She then walks away. Even I'm still not condoning the behaviour. The fact that she was flirty back in no way condones what happens next. But Anthony drums up a chant that I don't want to say the word on air, but I'll say it how a
you're doing well. I'll say that, Tony.
How a New Zealander would say it would be, "Show us your tuts."
Oh no,
that's what he says as she walks away.
Dear, oh dear.
This is year 10 boys. This is sheep following the herd. I admit that I didn't join in the chant immediately, but once there was in Bay 13 sound
to the
thing,
die was set,
I kind of might have joined in a couple. It then went completely out of control as what I would call the bad kids started introducing, this is from another part of the oval, the whole oval starts interacting at this point, other parts of the anatomy to the chant. So it's absolutely out of control, this incident of sexual harassment.
Zero, dear.
And so it goes on, and not surprisingly, the teacher goes to the headmaster and every boy on that oval gets lined up.
A job on the footy show? Sorry.
Gets lined up outside that office.
Oh, wow.
Headmaster's office. And I was, of course, going to deny it, which of the 70 people that that chanted that day, 67 people denied it.
But, of course they did.
But there was a guy in front of me who, I won't name him, but he was... I said, "So what are you going to say?" He said, "Oh, well, I guess I said that. I did join in and say the first one, the New Zealand one."
Yeah. Set the ball rolling.
Yeah. So I'm going to own up to it. And I went, "Oh my God, he's going to own up to it." I can't let him own up to it himself. I'll own up to it with him.
Wow.
And so I was convinced by this other guy's honesty to be honest. I should not have been honest.
That didn't spread to everyone?
This was a disgraceful incident, and they then had their four scapegoats. They wrote letters about us to every person in the school. They stood us up at assembly and ran through us. And, you know, it actually had quite a big impact on my rest of my time at that school.
Well, we seem to have... I think that it can be said that we've both learnt something from our disgraceful behaviour.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to find a positive message here to impart. We're already starting to get callers. The number is 1300 222-774. You can SMS us on 19774-774. Fess up to your disgraceful behaviour. We've all done something.
We've got a track coming up, but can I just say after the track, there's something on the screen here that just says, Andy, former sailor.
Okay. There's something. There's a carrot to dangle to the listener. But right now we do have a track. This is one of myself and Tony's favourites. This is the Felice Brothers with Penn Station. That's Penn Station. That'd be the Felice Brothers here on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for Derek Gill. Filling in disgracefully, we're being told by the listeners. People are saying this is not the topic for amusement. Drunken behaviour.
Well, we were not in any way trying to condone what happened at the Brownlow or in its aftermath.
I heard us use the word condone about 15 times in about a minute back there. We're not condoning drunken behaviour. We're not condoning the pirate's work. We're not condoning the man who is having a cigarette and vomiting in the rain or the naked cops running around. And we're certainly not saying it's funny. I agree there is nothing funny about five naked policemen running round and round their own van in the middle of heavy traffic.
It's not even in fast forward.
It's not to be, even with that music underneath it. We will take one call and then, don't worry, we will change gears and we will get back onto something safe and Gill friendly. Let's just say that. Andy, former sailor, are you with us?
I am.
We seem to have shocked some of our listeners with this topic, but do you have something you'd like to confess up to?
Look, mate, I've been in a speaking left-handed braille state in more places than I care to remember and possibly can't remember.
And now, is this connected with your military activity in any way?
Yes, after that, I'd like to know where moderation is, because I tend to drink in houses of ill repute, and maybe if I drank in moderation, I wouldn't get into as much trouble, but...
What's the most trouble you've been in?
Probably the funniest one involved the theft of a horse.
Right.
For a particular reason. We were alongside in a port and looked at the local gig guide and decided we'd go off and see a blues band at a pub and all jumped in a taxi, went off to the pub and had a rockin' good night out in the sticks just out of town, and about 2 o'clock when everything closed down, we tried to call a taxi and none were willing to come out to this house of ill repute
because
of particular reputation. So we commenced to walk the 20-odd Ks or something home, and having grown up in outback Australia and ridden a few horses, I spotted a horse in a paddock and relieved the owner of the horse and rode it back and tied it up alongside the wharf and then didn't even remember doing it.
That's what the Kelly gang did. I believe the word is Russell.
Yes, the rightful owner did get the horse back.
That is a happy ending. And it sounds to me, for the sake of the integrity of our armed forces, we probably shouldn't eke too many further stories out of you, Andy.
Oh, not just me, but some of the ones I've seen have been quite incredible too.
Can you be charged with being drunk in charge of a horse?
Yes, you can, actually. On a public road, there was a fellow booked in Roma last year for riding a horse whilst drunk.
Okay, you seem to have all the stats at your fingertips there, Andy.
Well, I was in Roma at the time.
But of course, you've learned from your mistakes, haven't you? It'd be fair to say.
Yes, I drink in responsible moderation these days.
Of course, I do.
I don't trust a man who doesn't drink.
Well, thanks for sharing those memories with us, Andy.
Don't worry.
And maybe have a bit of a quiet evening.
I've just got home. I'm going to peel the scab off a tin in about 5 minutes.
Yes, that's right. A tin of low alcoholic water. thank you very much, Andy. The listeners have spoken. We're not going to take any more calls on this topic. The feeling is that we're making fun of a serious subject, and I hate to do that. Well, naked policemen are not funny.
The story also, we did not want only to elicit stories about drinking either.
No.
We were... we were, like, for example, a bad behaviour moment in my life that didn't involve alcohol was I was involved in what I regard as a tabloid television moment.
Oh, what did you do?
On Channel 7.
Oh, because you were on that show, weren't
the
you?
The Late Report.
The Late Report. I think 774's own Richard Stubbs might have been involved in that as well. John Safran.
Well, Richard Stubbs had nothing to do with approving this story idea, but we decided to do a thing about the Desperate and Dateless Ball.
Oh, yes. Well, that's always trouble.
And I sort of enrolled to be a part of that, and then the whole night was filmed, me and my date was filmed through black windows of a van and, you know, a hidden camera following us the entire evening. And so this girl's comments to me and our date was recorded. And then at the end of the night, there was a reveal. Oh, by the way, our Desperate and Dateless date has been recorded for news on a television show. And she called me the same thing that guy at the Goldie Awards in Queensland got called by you.
He got called by me, I admit it. I've apologised. Well, and the footage never went to air.
No. So that's not a drunken bad behaviour. No. That's just standard, right? That's a standard day-to-day bad behaviour.
No, that'd get you a whole series now, I think, that sort of... Because there was a lot of stuff on that show. Was that the one where John Safran sent a robot?
Oh, that was such a funny idea. This was a time when Shane Warne was trying to give up smoking, and he'd been in trouble with one of those products that help you give up smoking.
Right.
He was promoting it, and he'd been paid, I think, a large amount of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, in order to be the spokesperson for this company, and yet he was in trouble because he was continuing to smoke, and so now he was giving up again in order to maintain the contract. And so what Safran did was to send out a seagull onto the MCG.
A mechanical seagull.
With a cigarette in its mouth, because, of course, the idea that if what reformed smokers really don't need is to have the waft of cigarette smoke in their nose. Well, John tried to tempt Warnie whilst in the middle of an over.
And did that go to air? Was the footage banned or something, wasn't it?
I think that did go to air, although he was charged, John was charged with trespass, I think it was.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to put things onto the MCG or else either yourself or anything else.
Or a mechanical seagull.
It's a good week. Grand final week's a good week to remind people that you're not allowed to, for example, your bad behaviour may be streaking or whatever. Well, that would this is treated similarly.
Right. So, okay, we've had drinking and smoking. I'd like to just assure Derek Giel's listeners that the show will be taking a positive swing from now on. Pete Smith is coming in later in evening dress to correct us on our enunciation, to supervise the quiz and to make sure things are above board and perhaps more professional than they have been for the last few days. We've got a glee club coming in for a sing-along. Tracy Harvey is going to be here. But right now, let's find out what is happening in the serious world of news. Jim Graham, are you there?
I certainly am, Tony.
If you could clean us up, please.
Give me a brush and a scrubber and I'll be down there just in seconds.
Sure. Take it away.
No worries.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right. Sitting in the Giel-shaped chairs tonight once again, and if you've just joined us, we were... our listeners have spoken. They've said we were making fun of a serious subject. Drunken footballers and naked footballers and naked policemen. Certainly not a subject to be mocked.
No. Or even to be sprung off for a talkback topic.
No.
And the confessional feel wasn't really working. I think people want to keep their own midnight sojourns through the streets to themselves. And so we've decided just to talk about other stuff.
Let's talk about inventions, great inventions, because you seem to be quite impressed by an idea. I've been floating since I was a kid. I came up with this idea, and I can't believe it's not been done. Tea bags with the sugar already in them. Don't you think that's a good idea?
That's a brilliant idea. Everyone would tell you that that is a brilliant idea. You should do that.
In denominations of one, 1.5, and 2.
Do you like it when people say... Just three?
Just 2?
Even just 2 is quite a a lot to put a just in front of.
Well,
just the two or just the three?
Just the three. See, I'm getting down. I was two for years, and I'm now down to 1 3/4. I'm heading slowly towards having 1.5 sugars. That's my goal.
Well, good luck with
that. To get down to just 1.5. But, I floated that idea in the 80s, and I think it was subsequently used as a plot line. I could be wrong about this, in an episode of Colin Carpenter, the sitcom. I think Colin Carpenter, the character, actually came up with that idea. So it's now been done as a comedy thing, but I just think that could work.
It's a brilliant idea. And have you had a look to see whether it's hit the patent list?
I've never really bothered to check.
See, this is the rude shock I obtained. I'll start with my idea that I'm not sure has been done.
Right, right.
But should surely be done, which is, I worked in breakfast radio for a little while. You've worked in breakfast radio as well.
You have to get up very early.
I have to get up very early. It's quite a cruel alarm for everyone in the bed, including the person, including the person that isn't getting up at 4 a.m.
Have you ever been encouraged to maybe sleep somewhere else?
That's the direction things go. But save the relationship with Tony Wilson's patented wrist alarm, which, like a mobile phone, can vibrate.
Oh,
you set the time on the wristband, and so and then it just at 4:15 in the morning, your wrist starts manically vibrating and wakes you up.
So it's a vibrating wristwatch.
Exactly.
With a silent alarm. But have you actually tested that? Would that wake you up? Would the vibration be enough?
This is the thing that has to be a good vibration.
It has to be tested in a wind tunnel to see if it could work.
So that was one of my ideas, and I haven't checked to see if that one's been invented. The other one I thought of your music MP3 player.
Yeah.
Swimming.
Hmm.
It would be nice to be able to listen to music because swimming is quite monotonous, I guess. And it takes a long time, and everyone seems to enjoy listening to music while they run. So wouldn't it be nice while you're swimming to put headphones on and be able to listen to music while
you
swim?
Really work?
Well, it doesn't sound like it could, but I thought, maybe it will. But you look it up on the internet and someone's already patented that. And not only that, they've thought of some ingenious way of sending vibrations through the bones of your ear, the inner ear bones, and that's how the sound is transmitted. We need the scientists to kick in here and tell us exactly what's going on, but it's the point, I think, is that have you had an idea that you thought was going to be your great invention, but a little bit of research turned up that it was already on the slate.
Someone had beaten
you. Edison got it.
That's right, that bloke. He was there. 1-300-222-774 is the number to call. 1-9-774-774 is the number to SMS. When I was a kid, lived in a block of flats, and down the back of our block of flats, there were some Americans who moved in. And the bloke who was the sort of patriarch of the family was a very mysterious figure who had a job at Aerospace, working on something we were not allowed to know. We weren't even allowed to ask him about it. It was so governmental and top secret. But during his lunch hour, he invented something that you do actually see in people's houses from time to time, the sink plug holder. Now, do you know what that is? It's like a disc, an oval-shaped flat disc with a bit of double-sided tape and then two hooks.
Yeah, I've seen that.
He invented that in the 70s in his lunch hour, and we had the prototype on the wall of our kitchen for years, just rusting away. Should probably be in a museum, my mother said. And he now lives off the royalties for the sink plug holder.
Wow.
Lives very happily in earthquake-strewn California, just collecting a check every year. And, just something as simple as that. I always remember reading that the bloke who put the bendy bits in the hairpin made millions off that.
Wow.
Was able to retire off the bendy bits in the hairpin.
Because that improved where the hairpin was at, pre-bendy bits.
I think so. It did. 1-300-222-774 is the number to call. But let's have some music. Let's have some Australian music. This is a track that I think should have got a little bit more airplay than it did when it came out. This is from Richard In My Mind, the name of the band, from the album Future Prehistoric, Boat Is Rockin'. ¶¶
you don't need a plan.
That's Richard In My Mind, Australian music there. Boat is rocking here on 774, Melbourne, of course, and ABC Victoria. Hello to you if you're listening. Tony Wilson and Tony Martin filling in for Derek Gill and trying not to alienate his regular listeners with tales of drunken, naked policemen and footballers. We've changed gears.
Well, the boat was rocking.
The boat literally was rocking, and we don't want to, you know, we don't want Derek to come back and find nobody here.
No.
So we're saying inventions. What have you come up with that, you know, maybe was later done by somebody else, you know, like the internet, for example?
Yeah.
We've all thought of that and then discovered it's already been done. Jonathan from Box Hill North, what was your invention?
Thanks, guys. I enjoy your show, by the way. I had a brilliant garden idea for a while, which was a device that straightens sausages when you cook them.
Straightens sausages when you cook them?
You know when you put them on the barbecue and you start to cook them, all of a sudden they curl up into a C shape, and you spend the rest of your time cooking, trying to balance them so they're cooking evenly all around.
Yeah, that is a problem. But what was your invention? How did you counter this?
Well, the problem was I had the problem but not the solution, and I spent years and years at traffic lights trying to work it out until one night I was gutted. I was watching The New Inventors.
What was their solution?
Well, someone had a skewered device of about six skewers in a line, and he'd skewer down the middle of the sausage and just roll them across the top of the barbecue.
Oh, right. So it's sort of providing a sort of vertebrae system for the sausages.
That's right, yeah. I don't know how effective it was. I think the result was some people don't exactly like cooking sausages because they enjoy the goodness to stay in it. So I don't know if it was entirely solved, but I was a bit disheartened after that, and I gave up on the idea.
Oh, Jonathan, surely you're working on something new.
I am trying to think of other ideas to get me out of this job I'm in, but anyway, we'll wait and see. It's not Amway either.
Well, the best of luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Keep inventing. Michael, I understand you've got an invention to tell us about. Is that right?
Well, I've got some bad news for you, Mr. Wilson. The vibrating wrist thing has already been invented.
Damn.
The alarm clock.
Oh, and have you got one?
Yeah. Look, I had the privilege of working at Tandy Electronics in the 90s, and they had one of those rubbishy things. But, you know, they had all sorts of crazy stuff.
And did it work, though, that idea? Does it work?
Look, I don't know. I never tested it out, actually. It was a pretty boring store, though, so it could have kept me awake. But I've got one other thing as well. Tony Martin, you're a big fan of Gilligan's Island, no doubt.
Yeah, I do. I'm a big fan. I was actually a little bit too young for Gilligan's Island, and I spent more time watching the sequel. I don't know if you remember the sequel, Dusty's Trail, where Gilligan was once again transported through time to the Old West, apparently, and lost in the sort of Wild West area. But, yes, let's go with Gilligan's Island.
He probably caught up with Alex P. Michael J. Fox, but never mind.
Probably did.
No, the professor went... The telemovie that they did, one of those reunion things, and they got back to civilization.
Did they really?
The professor went... Yeah, it was a motion picture triumph, actually.
I only remember the Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island. I don't think anyone got... You know, you're going, well... Surely if the Globetrotters could have gotten off, they could have taken the cast with them. But, no, what happened there? What was the invention?
Well, after the professor invented the three-tiered canoe to get them back to civilization, he went crazy inventing stuff, disappointed that he invented the skateboard.
Oh, really?
And what he know, it had already been invented.
The three-tiered canoe was the secret to their escape, you say?
It sure was. With, I think, a magic... magnetic part that fell from outer space from a Soviet satellite.
Wow.
I'm surprised I can remember all of this, quite frankly.
Well, I never knew that they got off that island. That's a big bombshell for me.
Well, at the end of the film, they went on another three-hour tour and ended back up on the same island.
Oh, so they didn't? Really?
Writing, it's riding a triple. It's like a Police Academy series of films. It's all there for the taking.
They must have been furious when that happened.
I just imagine them round the table in the script writing room. Can we put them back on? Can we put them, Dave? Can we put them up, Mount Michael? Can we put them back on? Let's do it.
And I think Gilligan actually found a part of the old bit of the boat from the original SS Minnow when they landed back on the island.
Oh, well, there you go. There's the irony. Well, thank you, Michael. Thanks for telling us about that.
Pleasure.
Who would have thought, Tone? Almost no one wants to share their million-dollar invention idea with us.
I'm sure Tracy Harvey does. Welcome back.
Good evening, gentlemen. It's great to see you this evening.
It's good to have you here to sort of clean up the program.
Yep,
we've had a number of complaints already. We're not even through the first hour.
Well, I was one of the complainers. Were
you out there?
But look, I want to just share with you. I grew up with in the house of inventorism. My dad was top inventor,
really?
Always into schemes that would save us time and money. The biggest one that he initiated was that to save us from having to make our beds, he nailed our blankets and sheets to the end of the bed with a bit of 2B1 over the top of it, which was quite good until, you know, you needed to change the sheets. We didn't have wardrobes. We had fruit boxes and all our clothes lived in a fruit box. And Dad used to say, if your mother could fit into a fruit box, she'd be in there. We didn't have an ironing board.
No.
We had, our iron was on a pulley system. When you wanted to use it, you had to sort of jump up and pull it down from the ceiling where the iron sort of used to live. You know,
Sort of Wallace and Gromit style.
Yeah, very much Wallace and Gromit. And yes, I had a pretty traumatised childhood.
It sounds like it. The sheets nailed to the bed.
When I had my first confirmation, you know, good Catholic upbringing.
Yes.
Praise the Lord. We couldn't afford, this is starting to get a bit depressing now, we couldn't afford, like, you know, black patent leather shoes like all the other kids.
No.
So Dad painted my jiffies black.
Oh, dear, oh dear. He's quite an ingenious man, though.
He is. He's still going. But, so that's a sort of, you know.
Well, that's quite an impressive collection. Tony Wilson claims he dreamt the
Amazing Race.
The TV show The Amazing Race.
You really?
Well, I was on a show, Race Around the World, which was an uncaffeinated version of The Amazing Race. It was single individuals going around the world making videos.
Yes.
But the dream I had was that you would be set a task to get to a spot on the planet and individuals would then take on each other, and that there would be baddies that almost had laser, you know, like those games you can play where there's a laser beam
tag
that can hit you in the chest. And if you got laser tagged on your way to that
sort of the paintball thing,
and it was all filmed, then you were out if you were laser tagged by the baddies.
The thing about this, Tony, is I think you can be sure as eggs, once you have an idea, it's pretty likely someone else on the planet will get that idea too.
Yeah.
Because I think ideas tend to come into our consciousness at the same sort of time.
That's
like shows for TV, ideas for TV shows. You know, I had an idea the other day called Mum and Mum for a sitcom on the ABC about two mothers bringing up kids.
Right, has that been done?
A really great idea. I shouldn't be giving that away.
No,
can I just copyright that now? But, you know, Mum and Mum. So it would be from the perspective of, say, a couple of boys growing up with two lesbian mothers.
Right, gotcha.
Which sounds like, you know, it'd be quite good fun.
And
interesting themes to explore in there.
And that's already been done?
Well, no, but I'm saying it's the sort of thing, if you read it in the Green Guide next week that, you know, there's a show called Mum and Mum, you know, coming soon on the ABC, you'd think, oh, yeah, that sounds feasible. You know, it's the sort of thing you could think of, Tony.
You really should be giving your agent's name straight after you give an idea like that.
Yeah,
Tracy
Harvey.
But there was My Two Dads a few years ago. I think that was... Was that from...
That was from
the bloke who did...
I'd not heard of that.
I'm not sure.
And there's that other one, The Two Dads and a Son. What is it? It's actually very good, the American sitcom.
Two and a Half Men.
Dads, Men, yes.
Yeah, that's massively popular. But that's different from your concept.
Well, yeah, Mum and Mum. Or it could be Dad and Dad.
And you thought, but I like the fact that Tony's dreamt his idea.
Yeah, so very
impressive,
Tony.
That's quite coherent. You've got a camera crew set up.
Yeah, I love the dream. It's the greatest dream I've ever had.
Fantastic.
And if I had have followed it, I would be one of the richest people in Australia if I had have actually delivered on the dream. Although you'll say to me, or someone in the production process would have said to me, your baddies aren't going to work. Let's just make it an obstacle course.
I think because they didn't have that in the Great Race, did they?
No, they didn't have it.
But that's a good addition to it.
Or do you think it's a new idea? Can we call it the world race and put baddies in the amazing race?
The fantastic race. Just
totally,
yeah.
It's a great race.
Look, if they can do 10, 20 to 1, yeah, and that other show that's not 20 to 1.
The Spearman Experiment.
Yeah, if they can do those two, then I can do the amazing race with baddies and give it a new name, can I?
I think the thing is here, we've unearthed the incredible genius that, you know, just in this room there is. I mean, out there are so many ideas for wonderful shows and inventions, and we need to somehow grow these more and develop these. And this I'm saying to the ABC, because seriously, it does, you know, it represents the people, and, you know, possibly there could be more turnover of ideas and less preciousness, I think, about, oh, it's got to be a rater, it's got to be a bestseller. You know, I think if we could somehow have an environment where these great ideas could be nourished and nurtured, wouldn't that be a good thing?
It would be, but people do dive on an idea when it's working. I mean, I don't think...
Look, ideas are easy. It's the execution that takes so long, the commitment.
Well, it seems to be... I think everyone seems to agree that the Spearman Experiment is basically 15 to 1. But I like the fact that it's called... Do you think it would have been called the Spearman Experiment if it wasn't...
Sounds like a nightclub.
It sounds like the Gruen Transfer is what it sounds like. Isn't that based on... There was a bloke called Gruen who did something years ago, and this is the same. There was a man called Spearman. Is it like... We're going to see a lot of these now. The Montalban Directive. Is that going to be what shows sound like?
The Null Set.
Now, let's have some music, and then we have to hear about what Tracy's preparing. Quite an elaborate treat for us outside the window.
It's going to be big.
It is going to be big, but what have you selected for us, Mr. Wilson?
I have selected a piece
called
Consolation Prizes by Phoenix.
Let's hear it. That's Consolation Prizes Phoenix here on 774 Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Good evening. If you've just joined us, Tony Martin and Tony Wilson sitting in for Derek Gill, and Tracy Harvey, a regular on the program, sitting in as well.
Tony, I've got to ask you, and Tony, what is the worst word you would ever want to hear in an operating theatre?
The worst word. The worst phrase would be...
can't.
The worst word you ever could possibly hear in an operating theatre is, oops.
Oops. That would be a bad one.
Isn't that great? Because it can just imply everything from, I've cut off the wrong leg, to, oops, I've dropped my mascara, or it's wonderful, isn't
this
it?
This hasn't happened to you, I'm hoping.
Maybe, I don't know, I might have been asleep when it did.
Because you do often read about people, you know, having to go back in because there's a bit of equipment being left.
I think there's huge things. Well, apparently in operating theatres now, they have a thing called time out while they're doing an operation. And I think they do it in a lot of operations where it's just that, where everyone downs tools. And it's like, okay, we got the right patient, check their name, check their sex, check which leg we are chopping off, you know, which side are we operating on.
Count the tools,
what have we left in there, what have we... All of that, which it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yes, I had a Labrador dog that had a surgical swab left inside it after a tennis ball had already been removed. The dog ate a tennis ball in three sections because a Labrador will eat anything.
They do that, yes.
A tennis ball could be a sandwich, I'm going to eat it anyway.
Quite bouncy after.
Had to go back in to have equipment removed. It's like one of those magic tricks where they're just pulling scarves out of someone's sleeve.
Did they charge you for the extra removal?
I'm not sure if we ever got an invoice for that, but oops. Okay,
it's
we don't want to hear
terribly
that.
Terribly expensive.
It is.
The old canines. But yes, oops.
Now, we have got the news is on the way. After the news, what are you going to be doing, Tracy?
We have got a hooly-dooly of a glee club choir.
A glee club choir outside the window.
With grand final team club songs.
Wow. And these people, they're rehearsing.
There's about 20 of them, and they're live outside our window.
And then tasteful, clean entertainment will continue with Pete Smith joining us here on 774 News is next.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right. And we're outside the studio at the moment. Tracy Harvey is still with us. Tracy, what have you got for us here?
Tony and Tony, live in the studios of the ABC, would you please make welcome the Glee Club?
Ooh, we are strong. team of all. We are Geelong. We're always on the ball. We play the game as it should be played. At home or far away. Our banners fly high from tall to dark. Down at Virginia Park.
Hey, Glee Club, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Owen.
Owen who?
That was, you know the old showbiz rule, never work with children or glee clubs. And yet that was incredible.
Wasn't that fantastic?
Tracy, where did you find these people?
I looked, they were in the bottom of the garden this morning when I went out there, and I'm so glad I just woke up this morning. But we must start by introducing the Glee Club director, Vicky Jacobs. Welcome. Vicky, you are a star. You worked that medley up on the way here in the car.
Pretty much, yes.
And I understand you are also a professional musician. You're currently playing keyboards in the Jersey Boys.
Yeah.
We better make sure you don't miss the start
of that
show.
I'll get the night off. This is the best thing ever. I'm going to be home before 11 o'clock. I'm thrilled.
Now, Vicky, you've got a great team. How many members have we got here tonight, just for the listeners?
I think about 24 tonight.
Now, can I ask you, John, why are you in the Glee Club? Why is it different to other choirs?
Oh, it's just good fun, and it's no commitment. You can come 1 week at a time or every week. It's all up to you.
And where
one
do
week
you
at a time. Where using your football cliches to fit in with your club songs there, John.
Where do you practice, Christine?
At the Butterfly Club down in South Melbourne.
At the Butterfly Club? And I hear you can buy alcohol down
there
too.
You drink and sing.
Drink and sing at the same time.
I have been to the Butterfly Club. They make some very elaborate cocktails. I hope you're staying out of the back room there. No.
Now, what sort of range of vocals do we have in the Glee Club, Janet? We've got...
Well, we're altos.
Yes.
So you're speaking to us, a few altos
Sharon
here.
Sharon and Bonnie,
yep.
And Janet are,
yeah,
altos.
And a few others there.
Do we have any sopranos, ladies?
Yes.
So that would be Tamara and Simone. And what do you get out of the Glee Club, Simone?
It's like my weekly therapy.
And have you...
Relaxing and always come home uplifted, and I just love it.
And do we have any affairs happening as well, Sarah?
I can only speak for myself, but no.
Wonderful, wonderful. And once a Glee Club member, always a Glee Club member. Vicky, the whole thing about it is you don't have rules, is that right?
Yeah, no, the first rule of Glee Club is you don't talk about Glee Club. I think that's... We all know that.
What are you going to sing for us next, Vicky?
We're going to sing a little Monty Python medley that we've whipped up. And look, as you said, like, there's no rules, but also there's no commitment. So the choir we have here tonight is a different choir than we had the one the Wednesday before, and probably a different group than we'll have the one for Wednesday after.
I mean, these are all imposters?
Uh-huh. I've never seen them before in my life. No, there are lots of people who come every week, but a lot of people just kind of swim in and out. So some people turn up to the club tonight not even knowing they were going to come to the ABC studio.
Do you mean they're not all St Kilda Geelong supporters?
No. No.
Go Saints. Go Saints.
So what we've whipped up in this hour before we came is this little Monty Python medley and this great song called Sing, which is by the Dresden Dolls, which is like a kind of, I don't know, hip American kind of band, but it's all about singing, which is what we like.
Take it away, Glee Club.
On a plane.
sun that is the source of all our power. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, cause there's bugger all down here on Earth. And always look on the bright side of life. If life is the only rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just pass your lips a whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Side of life. Side of life. Side of life. Side of life.
Beautiful.
Live in the studios of the ABC Vicky team. That was just fantastic. Do you want more members? Do you want more people to join?
Anyone can come whenever they want. That's the great thing about it. So it's always open. There's new people who come every week. So you're never, you know, the only new person there.
Where can the listeners learn more about you?
So we're on Tuesday and Wednesday nights at the Butterfly Club in South Melbourne. And you can go to their website, which is thebutterflyclub.com. Or you can check us out at our website, which is gleeclubsinging.com. But she says Wednesdays at the Butterfly Club, just rock up, $10, buy a drink, have a sing.
It's very impressive, isn't it, Tony?
It certainly is. Is there anyone here who you feel will be, you know, splintering off into their own solo project? Is anyone...
She's not here tonight, but one of our regular singers was top 100 in Idol, nonetheless.
Top 100.
And he's in the shortlist for the Rob Guest Vocal Prize this year.
Top 100.
Wow. So we have the serious and we have people who've never sung a note before in their lives. Isn't that amazing?
It's fantastic. And you've got, so you've got Classic Wednesdays. What is the differentiation between Classic Wednesdays and Show Tune Tuesdays?
We don't sing classical music on Wednesdays. We sing stuff like you've heard tonight on Wednesdays.
And they serve Tuesdays, port on Wednesdays.
And we serve port on Wednesdays. And on Tuesdays, they just do show tunes, songs from musicals, because I'm a music theatre geek, so I have to share that with the world.
And Heavy Metal Thursdays, that didn't pan out for you?
Just the numbers weren't good enough to run with it, you know?
The selection of anvil tunes wasn't working.
I've got to ask Charnine, what is it about singing? Why is it so important, Charnine?
I've been singing since I was a small child, and I sung in a lot of really serious, stuffy choirs, but this one's really good because you get to sing what you like and there's not the intimidation that comes with the sort of stuffy kind of choirs.
Vicky's whip is quite short. I mean, it's not, you know...
Sometimes.
So it's pretty much just not too much pressure. If someone, what happens though if someone is really singing out of tune? Or
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No, we just
have another tune.
Because you know what, often too they get better after a little while,
yes.
And that's the best thing of all. Because you know sometimes like kids get told they can't sing,
yes,
and you never sing again. If you get told that when you're 10, you never sing again. But if you're brave enough to, you know, suck it up and have a go at Glee Club, then who knows, you might find there's actually a voice in there.
Well, 6:15 Tuesdays, that's when Show Tune Tuesdays happens, and Classic Wednesday 6:15 on Wednesdays, obviously, at the Butterfly Club in South Melbourne.
And you can just come and watch.
Vicky is only allowed to use her whip 7 times in the last 100 nights.
That's right. The Butterfly Club, of course, is right near the South Melbourne Town Hall.
Vicky, we've got to have one more.
Can yes,
you, have
please.
You got it in your Glee Club?
Yeah.
Have you really got it in you?
Yeah.
Have you really, really, really got it in you?
Yeah.
Let's hear it, Glee Club.
All the world's history gradually dying of shock. There is this thing that's like talking, except you don't talk. You sing. You sing. Sing cause it's obvious, sing for the astronauts, sing. Sing for the president, sing for the terrorists, sing. Sing for the soccer team, sing for the teacher who told you that you couldn't.
Club. Fantastic.
Beautiful. Thank you, Glee Clubbers. Thank you, Vicky. Thanks for everyone who took time to come in here tonight, and Glee Club occurs Tuesday and Wednesday nights at the Butterfly Club. Thank you, Tracy Harvey, for bringing everybody in.
Back down to the bottom of that garden with the Glee Club. Thank you, Glee Club. That was just beautiful.
Excellent. Tony, we've got Derek's quiz to prepare.
We have, and I've got some ground to cover in terms of getting over to the quiz, which is in a different room.
It is. To help us make that...
The Glee Club will carry you.
I wish they would. We're going to get a Glee Club Mexican wave going in just a moment, but in the meantime, here's Neil Young with Coupe de Ville. That's Coupe de Ville. That's Neil Young and the Blue Notes from the very underrated, I think, 1988 album, This Note's For You. Everyone knows the song Ten Men Working with a big brass attack, but some of the quieter songs on that album, very good. And before that, we had some Glee Club music, courtesy of Tracy Harvey.
Wasn't that up? It was up.
That's right. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson sitting in for Derek Gill. We've already had some unpleasantness on the program earlier. We were discussing, footballers and their antics and the police force up north and their nudity, and it was felt that we were making light of serious subjects. So I think the way to restore dignity and decorum to any broadcast, I find this has worked for me over a 20-year period. I've been dragging this man in to help me out of a hole. Pete Smith, welcome aboard.
Hiya, fellas.
Hello, Pete.
I've just had a traumatic experience of my own.
What
it's like to be 70-plus and walking down past the Arts Centre precinct and not seeing anybody your age and realising you're the only person who would have attended Worth Circus on the site?
Oh, Worth Circus.
It's upset me. No end.
I attended. I was very lucky to score an invite to your 70th birthday celebrations a few months ago now, a couple of months ago.
That's right. You were there.
It was incredible because, firstly, there was your dad.
Who's 94.
Yeah, I was not sure whether that was the done thing to say how old he is.
No. He openly says he's 94. He says he would have been 95, but his parents were shy.
Oh, of course. That's true.
Yeah.
So on stage, as it were, at your birthday, there was your dad, 94. There was you. Then there was your two sons. How old are they?
They're 42 and 40, and Melanie is 44, so...
And then there was their sons.
Yeah, their kids, yeah.
It was four generations of Smiths. It was kind of a bit of vaudeville going on.
Yeah, there was a bit, and it all stems from my father. And he wasn't an entertainer. I mean, the closest thing we ever came to show business is father was a sort of amateur magician, and when Dad was about 14, the old man disappeared with a chorus girl. That was about the only thing that I can trace back to showbiz.
But really? You started out at the ABC, though, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yes. And listening to the Glee Club tonight just brought back so many happy memories, because I used to be the announcer for a regular weekly program called The Village Glee Club.
And where did this broadcast out of?
Out of the old Broadcast House Studios, which is now the Supreme Court, I think it is.
Right.
Which makes me shudder every time I go past, because that was where the ABC, well, it didn't really begin there. It began, I think, in Russell Street, if you really want to go back, but that's where I worked at the Broadcast House.
And what year are we talking there?
We're talking late 50s, early 60s.
And so what really were the editorial policies of the time? There would have been a lot of things you couldn't say.
Yes, you couldn't mention commercial product. There was a wag of an announcer. There were some great people. I mean, I worked with. There were 30 full-time announcers on the ABC at that time. And one of them was Eric Coleman, the brother of Ronald Coleman, the screen actor.
Really?
So these were wonderful people to grow up with as a kid, you know. But this wag, no, I won't mention his name, but we used to play military music, marching music for 15 minutes at 8 a.m. every on the equivalent of 774. And
whose idea was that?
He used to, the programmers.
People want military music and marching music for breakfast, do they?
That's what they wanted. And then lunching and listening was 15 minutes of, you know, David Carroll and his orchestra, or David Rose, and maybe the stripper was about as ribald as we ever got.
Hello.
But he used to delight in occasionally saying, "It's 5 minutes past eight, and time for a capstan shanty." Capstan shanty, which, for those of you who are old enough listeners, will realise it's a musical piece.
Of course.
Time for a capstan was a well-known cry for cigarettes. And I realise now, as I say that, that the blank stares mean that people don't remember Capstan cigarettes. They were a very popular brand of cigarette.
I remember
like
you,
turf.
You showed me some footage once of a game show from the 60s broadcast here in Australia where the prizes were, in fact, cartons of cigarettes.
That's right. And several of my friends who are now habitual smokers, and I wish they weren't,
that's right.
Got on that kick because, of course, as compeers of the program, they were handed cartons of cigarettes. That was the consolation prize.
Wow.
And you would just smoke them on air? You'd be puffing away whilst doing your work?
There is a classic sale of the century piece where, you know, they do the fame game and they pan across the three contestants and they're all thinking and, you know, I was born in 1919 and the pans across, it's the classic thing, you know, went for 21 years, I'm sure everybody will realize.
Sure.
And it pans across and here's the bloke with a beard, a contestant, in the center of two girls, and as it pans across, he's on a fag, you know, deeply thinking, what could it be, you know?
Well, I remember...
It's amazing.
It used to happen, you know, even in the 70s, I remember about 5 years ago, they reissued The Exorcist, the movie The Exorcist, with deleted scenes added back in. And one was a scene where the possessed child is being examined by a doctor in a hospital and the parents are waiting outside in the corridor and the doctor comes out of the operating theatre smoking a huge fag, just going, oh, I've got some bad news about your daughter, possessed by the devil, just taking a few drags. One of the biggest laughs I've ever heard in a cinema.
Yeah.
But presumably, when The Exorcist was originally shown, that wouldn't have...
No, deadly serious. It would have just gone straight through to the keeper. But, I mean, you know, it was a... let's face it, it was a glamour thing to do in movies, wasn't it? Through the 30s and 40s, a glamour... And also, of course, a device, something to do with your hands. How often do you see now on TV where the classic thing is they hold hands or they, you know, clutch, you know, their shoulders or something.
Or Rebecca Gibney on Pack to the Rafters might cradle a coffee mug.
Yeah, because she's got nothing else to do at that time.
They'll get coffee eventually, Pete. Coffee will be banned in movies and films and television.
Yeah, people will be laughing. They'll be going to the cinema. Somebody will be drinking a coffee and they'll just be laughing.
Well, it's the same at the cinema. As a kid, my parents had permanent bookings at the Palais in St Kilda, Palais Pictures, for Saturday night.
Right.
And smoking. Nobody ever thought too bob about it. It was just smoking. Everybody smoked in. There was ashtrays.
Yes.
And I remember in the early 50s, I think, don't hold me to it, about 53 or 4, smoking was then banned in cinemas and auditoriums.
Right.
Only then was it banned.
And, of course, the nitrate film stock. Very flammable. Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Pete, you've mentioned Sale of the Century, and we're about to... radio's version of the Sale of the Century has to be Derek Gill's quiz. And if you'd like to take part, the number is 1-300-222-774. That number again, 1-300-222-774. And what we thought we'd do tonight, because it's been a tad shambolic in Derek's absence over the last few days, and I don't want to offend you, Tony, but, you know, there's been a lot of paper shuffling and there's been me...
People thought my voice doesn't have the suitable gravitas for a quiz. I can do back and forth with you.
Sure.
But do I do quiz? I don't think this voice does quiz.
Well, let's throw it over to the master. Pete, would you like to... I know you haven't had a chance to rehearse these questions prepared by Tony Wilson, but would you like to do the questions tonight?
Yes, rehearse. No need to start now.
Well, let's hit the music because, yes, 1-300-222-774, the number to call for Derek's quiz. And it's obviously jackpotting from last night, is that
jackpot.
Right?
Australia, folk songs and bush verse, convicts stained to shearers' blades. That's a 5-CD pack. Marple, Agatha Christie's Marple, Why Didn't They Ask Evans? We'll be handing that out. Being Human, Series 1. And The Cut, starring John Wood. All that.
10 minutes starts now.
10 minutes starts now. Leanne from Benalla is on the line. Are you there, Leanne? Can you hear me, Leanne?
Just to help Pete out, the carryover question last night, it was on revolutions. The carryover question involved the year of the Russian Revolution. But I'll let Pete take it away.
In what year, and I'm going to do this in a very mellifluous voice.
Yes, you could, Pete.
In what year was the Russian Revolution?
1917.
Yes.
Correct.
Well,
that's right,
done.
Leanne. Another question for Leanne.
I sense a winner coming on. Leanne, in what year was the Iranian Revolution?
1973.
Ooh.
No, I'm afraid not.
Leanne.
Thank you, Leanne. 1-300-222-774, the number to call. Greg from Ballarat is on the line. Greg, are you there?
I am.
All right. In what year was the Iranian Revolution, Greg?
The Iranian...
9 minutes.
All right, Vicar.
1976.
No, but we're getting hotter.
We are getting hotter. Thank you, Greg. Gordon from somewhere, according to my board. Are you there, Gordon?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, here's the question again.
In what year was the Iranian Revolution?
1980.
Very close. Gone too far on it now.
It's getting closer. Thank you, Gordon. Paul from Ballarat, that question again.
What year was the Iranian Revolution?
Well, if we're getting close, the last guess was too high, yes?
Yes.
I'll go 1979.
Yes!
Oh, that's correct.
All right, you stay on the line.
Another question for Paul.
In what year was the film Matrix Revolution released?
We've had the French, we've had the Russian, we've had the Iranian, and now the Matrix Revolution, or Revolutions, to use its correct title.
Probably one of the more important revolutions.
Yes.
Here, really.
One of the most, one of the more disappointing revolutions, I think we'd say.
On your bike.
I'm not really too sure, but I'll just say 2004.
Very, very close, but I'm afraid wrong, Paul.
Any consolation prize for that?
No, I'm afraid that's not how it works. Derek would be disgusted that you even thought that. Yoganamba from McLeod, are you with us?
Yes.
Your question, in what year was the film Matrix Revolutions released?
2003.
Yes. 2003 is correct.
Well done.
Another question for Yoganamba.
Who said, the reports of my death are greatly exaggerated? An author.
Australian?
No.
No, afraid not. You want to have a stab at it? Just choose an author.
Okay, no, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, sorry, Yoganamba. We will.
7 minutes.
All right, David from Mildura. You with us?
Yes, I am.
David, who said the reports of my death are greatly exaggerated?
Well, I've actually got no idea, but I'll say Bryce Courtney.
No, I'm sorry, it wasn't Bryce Courtney.
Whenever you need to dig out someone who said a quote, it's either Groucho Marx or
this bloke,
pretty
what
much.
What about saying an American?
All right, good an American quote. Author. Sorry, David, let's move on to Tim from Penrith, all the way up in Penrith. The question again?
Who said the reports of my death are greatly exaggerated?
That would have to be Mark Twain.
Who spent quite a bit of time in the botanical gardens.
He certainly did. Next question
for
Tim.
Which I had to walk through due to bad parking in the area. This one? Yes. Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks?
That'd have to be Shaft.
Yes!
Of course it is Shaft. John Shaft, I think you'll find.
All right.
Next question for Tim.
How many Grand Prix has Mark Webber won?
None?
No, that's not right.
No, not right. Sorry.
Out of date, that answer.
1-300-222-774, the number to call. We move on to Ian from Rosebud. That question again for Ian, Pete.
How many Grand Prix has Mark Webber won?
Hello. I say one.
Yes.
Correct, the German Grand Prix last year.
That's
correct.
After 131 starts. That's a fact. Several times the engine was switched on.
Next question for Ian, please, Pete.
On this day in 1962, The Jetsons premiered on TV in colour. What was the name of the daughter in The Jetsons?
Elroy was the son.
Yes, the boy.
Judy.
Yes.
Judy, correct.
Jane was his wife and Leastro the
Five
dog.
5 minutes.
Ian is flying.
What about Rhoda? She was the best, I reckon.
Well, yes, we don't have time to debate that.
We can't go sideways.
Next question for Ian, Pete.
Ian, what is the name of comedian Judith Lucy's recently released biography, The Lucy Family Alphabet?
I think I may not have bolded the answer there, Pete.
I think you've actually provided the answer within the structure
of
the question.
And incidentally, just to cover that balls up, Am what? I supposed to be able to say that I've got a copy of your biography? Not your biography, not, your not, new book?
It would be inappropriate that, in this segment, I think. We'll cover up that.
What were the rules in the 1950s?
Sorry about this, Ian. Oh, okay. We've got a fresh, unbroken question for you.
Yeah, Ian?
Go on. I'm still listening.
I'm amazed you're still listening, but here it is.
In maths set theory, what does an upside-down U represent?
A right side U.
4 minutes.
All right.
No, can't take that.
Hang on, lay that question on me again.
What does an up... Is he the producer? What does an upside down U represent?
In maths, in set theory.
Mathematics, an upside down U represents opposite to pi r square mc equals... Am I close?
No.
No, I'm sorry. Not really. It's not an easy question.
I'm sorry, Ian. We'll move on to Ross from Geelong. Are you there, Ross?
Yes, I am, Tony.
Do you know much about maths?
None at all.
This is
None
year seven all. Maths.
It's easy, yeah, apparently.
I think I did Maths T at school, which is pretty basic. So I'm going to go... I think it's got something to do with tangent.
No, I'm sorry.
That's mean, this question. Obviously, the producer wants to hold on to the set of Lame Licking Songs.
No, we really want to give it away. We really do want to give it away. If you think of the two circles...
3 minutes.
Which bit gets shaded with that upside down U?
All right, sorry, Ross. We'll move on to Danny from Caulfield. Danny, here's that question again.
Danny, in maths set theory, what does an upside down U represent?
Oh, geez, unfortunately, maths is not my strong point. I'll say intersects.
Yeah, I'm going to take that intersection between two sets, and we take that.
Correct.
All right.
All right, another question for Danny, Pete.
Danny, what is the southern latitude to the nearest degree of Melbourne?
Yes.
I see. It's 30-something degrees south. 33 degrees south.
No.
35?
No, sorry.
29, 73, 12.
Sorry, we can't take that,
sorry,
Danny.
Sorry, we can't accept that,
You've done
that,
so
Danny.
Well, Danny. You go to bed now.
Up until that point, you were doing very well. Rob from Cockatoo is here. Give him the question again, Pete.
Rob, what is the southern latitude to the nearest degree of Melbourne?
Is it 47?
2 minutes.
That would put us down somewhere cold.
No. 37 it is, isn't it?
No, I'm afraid we can't accept
that. Well, he did say 47 minutes. 47 minutes, 37 degrees. I think in fairness and...
do you think that...
I'm sorry, we can't accept that. Rob, we'll have to move on to Cam from North Ringwood. Any ideas?
Is it 37?
Yes, what? It is 37 degrees, but...
Well, it's 38, actually.
Well, 38, but it's within one, you said. You said within the nearest...
This is a very controversial edition.
Let's give Cam another one quickly. So we'll give a tick for that one, but make sure Cam has to do another question too. Okay.
Cam, which Australian-born author has won the Booker Prize twice?
I think you'll find Greg the Hammer Valentine.
A free plug for a friend, no doubt.
No, I'm sorry, Cam. Good answer, but wrong. Yes.
This is your last minute.
All right, it's the dinner gong. Genevieve from Richmond, that question again for you, Pete. Just hit it again.
Which Australian-born author has won the Booker Prize twice?
Australian author would be Bryce Courtney.
No. The persimmon tree failed to win the Booker to the surprise of punters everywhere.
As did Matthew Flinders' cat.
No, Genevieve, sorry about that. Harry from Frankston.
Oh, all my friends know I haven't read a book since 1977 HSC. I reckon it's got to be that bloke that wrote Cloudstrip. I can't think of him anyway.
That was Tim Winton, and I'm afraid that's wrong. Sorry, Harry. Jenny from Warragul, do you know the answer?
Oh, gosh, I was going to say that, but and I can't be inspired to say anything else, so I'll let you go for the next one.
Are you sure? Come on.
We talked about cattle rustling earlier.
A very famous Australian author. Who could it be? Just have a stab.
Cattle rustler. Any other clues?
No.
It's a bloke. It's a man. He's written a lot of books. He's won the Booker Prize twice.
Is a Booker
We really want this prize to go off. The reason
Tom
I'm...
Tom Jones. Not...
Tom Jones, sadly, didn't bag it.
No.
No, I'm sorry about that, Jenny.
No, all right, good night.
Okay, good night. Well, Pete, it's a sad ending to Derek's quiz. Once again, the prize jackpot. You're going to add more stuff to the tree,
There's four things. It's now taking the time it would take to get through three questions to just announce the prize.
Oh, so the quiz just doesn't go off on a bum note. You bring it up by putting in a couple of other...
Last night we put in Marple. Who knows? We could have... Wire in the Blood by the end of the week.
I'm just distracted by the image of Tom Jones sitting in a writer's garret somewhere bashing out his third straight Booker winner. Thank you very much, Pete. We want you to stick around. We need your help for the rest of this broadcast. Are you available? You're not booked for later, are you?
No.
All right, let's have some music. Ronnie Spector, You Can't Put Your Arms, I think it's your arms, around a memory. That's Ronnie Spector pointing out that you can't put your arms around a memory here on 774 Melbourne.
Is Ronnie, excuse me, but is he related to Phil?
It's Ronnie,
I think.
I'm a 60s.
That was a woman singing.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you know, it's so alternate.
It is very alternate. We're on the edge, clearly.
Ronnie married Phil and could have told us all. Has told us now, but could have told us back in the day that Phil was pretty unbalanced. He treated her very badly, I think. In fact, she wrote an interesting autobiography about Phil Spector's weirdness and violent tendencies.
Yeah, he gets to squeeze the toothpaste at the wrong end and all.
That's right. He's paying for it now, though, Pete. Who's laughing now?
Yeah.
You're listening to Tony Martin and Tony Wilson sitting in the Derek Gill-shaped chairs while Derek mans the Conversation Hour all this week on 774, and Pete Smith lending a touch of professionalism to the program. Pete, what we've been doing is we've been playing Frank Sinatra every night, because I'm a huge Sinatra buff, and I was just wondering, you would never have met Frank. But hang on, you would have worked on the Don Lane show, obviously. Well,
Frank Sinatra never made it
but
to the Don
Lane
show.
But members of the Rat Pack would, surely Sammy Davis
was... Oh, Sammy Davis. We've had some wonderful nights through my friendship with Bert and Patty, who were great mates of Sammy's over the years, from visits to America and then when Sammy came out here. And we've had the best nights probably of all time in Sammy Davis Jr.'s company. He's a film buff, as you know. He was a film buff.
Yeah, right.
And long before videotape machines, he used to travel with his own, you know, selection of movies.
Yeah.
And from America, and when he toured, he'd take movies with him because he was just mad on movies. And so one night we were asked to see the show, and I knew we'd be asked back after the show. And I thought, oh, gee, I'll just take a set of questions, like your quiz there, movie questions. And so I took about six foolscap pages of movie questions that I'd made up over the years and used on radio and stuff. Well, he didn't want to go to bed. And it went on till about 2 a.m. in the morning, and we had a Bert Newton versus Sammy Davis Jr. movie quiz.
Wow.
And he was just sensational and such a nice guy.
So when you say he travelled with films in the pre-video...
Travelled with videotape that were in some sort of a box container. They were the very first ones. I think it might have been a Philips format, whatever
it
was.
Giant U-matic or something.
Well, it wasn't that big.
Pre-U-matic.
But it was long, pre-U-matic, but it was amazing because, of course, you know, he had his fingertips on any, you know, and of course he was a mate of Bing Crosby's, and Crosby was the main shareholder in the Ampex Corporation, which invented the modern-day American videotape.
Wow.
So long before that, he travelled all this stuff, and of course it was American line system, so you have to bring your own monitors as well, and transformers to transform it back to 110 volts.
Wow.
So that's getting
it's
a
elaborate.
Bit deep. I know. It's very elaborate.
It's a big
but
rider.
He'd have at least 100 movies with him. It was quite extraordinary.
Well, I just read, I'm a big fan of the, I guess he's called a 70s film director, Hal Ashby, who made the films Harold and Maude, Being There, The Last Detail, with Jack Nicholson. Coming Home was one of his, I think. Bound for Glory.
Okay, is he still alive?
He's not still alive, so he died in the 80s. Shampoo is the one I was thinking of, Warren Beatty.
Yep.
Now, that's someone you would not think would have any connection with Sammy Davis Jr. Mm. There's never been a biography of Hal Ashby till this year. Someone has written a book called Being Hal Ashby, and he started out as Sammy Davis Jr.'s road manager.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, it's just
that's
like
amazing.
It's a connection I would never have picked.
But I mean, if you've read the biogs, and there's been quite a few biographies of, or certainly tales of Sammy Davis Jr. And the Rat Pack and that, but you know, the man told us himself had came up, you know, when they were headlining at the Dunes, as it was then, or the Sands.
The Sands, yeah.
The Sands, the Rat Pack, you know, there was Joey Bishop and Sammy and their names up in lights, and they were staying in the hotel on the, you know, probably on the penthouse floors. He wasn't allowed into the showroom. Of course, blacks were not allowed into the showroom.
Right, that's right.
He'd have to come down, he told us, through the kitchen. And that's in the book. That's not a revelation.
It's Rat Pack Confidential is
come
a very
down
good book.
Through the kitchen and really wasn't treated very well by your friend Frank.
Oh, really?
On occasions, no. Particularly when he embraced the, you know, when he married Mai, remember... What was her name? Not Mai Zedling, Mai...
Mia Farrow. When Sammy... Right.
And she then embraced the Jewish faith and all this, and Sinatra was very critical of it all, even though they were mates, and he put up with a lot from that mob.
Well, it just seems accidentally ironic that the track I've selected to play is That Old Black Magic from the album Come Swing With Me, with a fantastic Billy May arrangement. Remember the Billy May Orchestra?
Yes, yeah, Nelson Riddle, Billy May, what classics. This is Capitol stuff.
Capitol, the top shelf gear. Billy May was kind of a more hard-edged than Nelson Riddle. It was almost heavy metal music with some of Billy May's arrangements. So let's hear Frank Sinatra with That Old Black Magic. That is Frank Sinatra, That Old Black Magic, from the album Come Swing With Me, from the classic run of albums on the Capitol label. Tony Martin and Tony Wilson filling in for Derek Gill. Pete Smith is sitting in. Pete, you've been overseas, have you not? On the Gallivant.
Just back from 6 weeks in Scandinavia. And,
really? What is it like over there?
There's no place like home, let me tell you.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, it's terrific, but, I mean, we went to Norway, which has got to be the most expensive, never mind Japan.
Right.
Norway's got to be the most expensive country in the world.
It is known as being an expensive country.
They've got all that oil up there. They haven't joined the EU,
right.
So they can, they can do what they like, and, like a coffee is... $8.
And the fjords? The fjords are
wonderful. The views are wonderful. And thank goodness we prepaid.
What did Douglas Adams say?
Otherwise, we would have starved.
Douglas Adams had Slarty Bartfast winning an award for his fjords,
for his
I believe.
Fjords. That's correct.
When you get to my age, you've done the LA scene, you've been to Disneyland and the Epcot Center, and you need to get out and see the fjord land.
I'd like to picture you doing the LA scene, perhaps down in Venice Beach, hanging out with Dennis Hopper, getting a tattoo.
What about the Viper Lounge?
Have you done that, Pete?
No, but I think the sad part about it is for people like you, Tony, and me... And our ilk. The sad part about it is that Hollywood sort of doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's been almost wiped off the face of the earth. Yeah, you can go and stand outside Man's Chinese Theatre. It's not just Man's Theatre now, isn't it?
Right. Well, I'm not sure.
Grauman's? It used to be Grauman's Chinese Theatre, but now it's just Man's.
Yeah, the Brown Derby, that's been knocked down, hasn't it?
There's a Pete Smith star on the Walk of Fame.
Of course, because of the Pete Smith's specialities.
And Pete's specialties, the old MGM short subjects, and we went there and had a photo taken, but unfortunately... A dog had disgraced itself in the middle of the star.
Is that a review?
Well, it could have been. He may have known I was coming or didn't like the shorts, but yeah, it was very sad, and I could not get the marks off.
Pete Smith.
It doesn't come out clean, Pete Smith, but it's there, and it's opposite where the Brown Derby was, and the Brown Derby was there.
So there was a Brown Derby on the middle of Pete Smith's star.
That's right, and that's how far back I go, you know. But there's a beautiful book of aerial photos of Los Angeles, a coffee table book, and it's called Above Los Angeles.
Right.
And on the left-hand side of the page is how it was in the 20s.
Yep, yep.
And the modern-day interpretation, the aerial, you know.
What it looks
like
now.
And the development, and it's amazing.
Right.
Because it was really the wild, wild west.
Well, you mentioned there's a Pete Smith star. Once a year I get a photo in the post from someone who's taken a photo of Tony Martin's star.
The actor
Tony Martin, I think, still alive. Possibly.
Is Tony still alive?
His wife, Sid Charisse, passed away recently.
Yes, that was sad. Sid Charisse was out at Channel 9 just a few years ago to watch Hey Hey at Saturday. She knew somebody connected with the program, and her husband was in the, the chargé d'affaires for somewhere or other, and they were in town and came out to Hey Hey at Saturday. And I think that probably hastened her decline somehow.
She was quite a bit of all right.
Oh, she was beautiful, Sid Charisse. She was beautiful.
Well, speaking of those studios, Pete, can I just read something off the SMS? Bernie in Tallaroook has said that Pete once rode our tandem bicycle around the GTV studios in 1971 after Kevin Dennis' New Faces recording. He was lovely. I was 13 years old. Thanks, Pete.
That's nice to see you. That you're healthy and alive and have your memories. It's wonderful because I can't remember that, but, gee, they were fun times, and that's the sort of thing we used to do.
Yes.
Ride tandem bicycles around. Now, of course, they just get drunk and smoke and... Oh, no, we're not allowed to say that.
No, we were making fun of that earlier.
Oh, I didn't think you were making fun of it. I think you were bringing the front pages of the small little paper and the larger one to life.
I wish you'd been answering the phones, Pete. Look, that's, you know, that the footage you mentioned, like that footage of you riding a tandem bicycle, that wouldn't exist, would it? Much of that footage seems to have disappeared.
Well, it all went out live, and you've got to remember, too, that even in Hollywood, to get back to our favourite place or one of our favourite places, nobody thought about merchandise.
No.
Nobody thought about the future. Nobody knew about videotape or anything else. So nobody thought about retaining things that were going out live. Like this program, for instance, this could be available at an ABC shop next year if somebody had the foresight.
That's right. Well, let's hope so.
Somebody does, believe me.
Isn't it great to think that, you know, all those great Peter Cook and Dudley Moore episodes have been erased, but this will be preserved for all time to be enjoyed for generation after generation.
And could even be played on the BBC at some stage in a reciprocal arrangement.
Why not? Pete, look, you're not going anywhere, are you?
No. It depends how long the news is. I'd like to check out the plumbing, if I may, during the news break.
You can do that. We're going to have more Pete Smith in the next hour and a lot more here on 774. News is next.
Tony Martin and Tony Wilson on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
That's right, it's still Giel or no Giel here at 774 tonight. Once again, no Giel, just myself and Tony. And I always like to occasionally, that doesn't make any sense at all, does it? Always like to occasionally. It's very poor, very poor syntax here on the ABC.
Giel would never do that.
P. Smith is with us.
Hi, Tony.
He's monitoring the enunciation
on
tonight's
program.
I'm
putting my ABC voice on and watching your vowels.
What I always occasionally like to do is highlight the work of actors here in Australia. And tonight I'd like to send a shout out to Jacqueline Archer, who appeared in Rescue Special Ops on the weekend, playing the role of Astonished Florist. Well done, Jacqueline. I was hoping to get that role myself.
Can you explain how you could possibly know that?
I just spotted it in the credits. It's as simple as
you
that.
You look at credits, don't
you? I do check them, because you never know who's going to pop up.
But you really look at them.
But because people I know might pop up, and then you're going to bump into them, and they're going to say, did you see me as the Astonished Florist? You didn't register my astonishment? And then, you know, it's embarrassing if you haven't seen their work.
Do you love the fact... Do you think the director has had fun there with putting Astonished in? Because could it have just been Florist? Or was there another cast member who was Florist?
Who was just Florist, and in order to differentiate, they've added an Astonished. I don't know. Oh. I don't know. I'd like to think that there were a number of actors snaking out the door and down the corridor, registering astonishment one after another, till they went, that's our Florist!
Exactly.
Pete, have you ever done any Astonished acting? You've done so much acting over the years.
I did a bit of Astonished acting in Bad Eggs, if you recall, under your direction.
You were very good in Bad Eggs.
Was I last on the credits like Astonished Florist?
No, because it was in order of appearance. No, you were in the opening credits. I made sure you got an opening credit. As that car was rolling down the hill, your name came up there.
So it did.
I'm sorry that it hasn't led to... Oh, no, you were in Hang on, you were in Kenny. You were in Kenny.
No.
You did. You did something in
Kenny. No, I didn't. Did nothing in Kenny.
Or you were a voiceover?
I was under contract to you at the time. I couldn't make a move.
I'm going to ask Lisa. Lisa, could you look up Pete Smith's page on the Internet Movie Database? I'm sure you had something to do with Kenny. Look, maybe our next guest will know the answer. Mary Jane Fenwick is with us, described as a girl about town, and of course the producer of 774 ABC Mornings with John Fane.
With Mr. Faino, yes, that's me.
You're the producer.
Is that a tough gig? Is he cracked the whip?
He does. He's such a softie.
No.
He's such a softie, Fane. So no, he never really cracks the whip.
You don't get any of that sort of dialogue that you hear from... I've been told not to mention this bloke because we don't like to encourage him, but a certain radio announcer in Sydney who's known to swear at his staff.
Ooh, I don't know about that. No, Fane never swears at his staff.
Oh, okay.
Although...
He seems very nice.
Although I do often say to people that the production meeting before we go on air is always very colourful and entertaining.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you've got to work out the issues for
work
the day.
Work out what our stories are of the day, and
Mary
that can
Jane,
always be quite entertaining.
Has he ever tried to alter your will? You know, with his background in law? Hey?
No.
Has he?
No.
No?
It's a hard-hitting question for this program.
Thank you. Pete, did you ever do production work before you went into the announcing stuff, or did that voice just immediately throw you into this side of the glass?
I was a messenger boy here at the ABC for 6 years and nagged them until finally they let me on the air.
And I'm not saying that this is John Fain, but was there a big ego that people tiptoed around in those days when you were starting out?
No, because they didn't have stars on the ABC in those days. They only had duty announcers. And only a few chosen people ever did their own programs, like Dr. A.E. Floyd, who went to God a long time ago. He used to do a classical music program. Kim Bonython, a jazz expert, used to do Jazz Unlimited in Adelaide. And Russ Tyson used to do the Hospital Half Hour from Brisbane.
The Hospital Half Hour.
Yes, and they were big names. They were as big as Jack Davey or Bob Dyer ever was.
Right.
On the ABC, but there were only a chosen few. Oh, and Pete Smith.
Pete Smith.
Used to do the 10 top tunes of the week.
And
that was heavy stuff.
Here you go, sound mixer. Really? That's a different Peter Smith. No, you're on the wrong Peter Smith's page, Lisa. There are a number of Peter Smiths.
Yes. Believe it or not.
There are quite a few. Sorry, I'm getting...
Hasn't she ever looked up Tony Martin?
You don't want to do that. You'll get that bloke who shoots people who break into his house in England. Or you'll get the ex-lead singer of Black Sabbath or the German cyclist.
Best young rider.
Is he?
The Tour de France.
He's doing really well, isn't he?
You are in grave danger. We've talked about this. When someone comes from behind, when you are something of a personality, but the big one is coming. He's the big one, Tony.
Yeah, Tony.
If he wins a Tour de France, it'll be like your name is Lance Armstrong.
Well, I mentioned this on Lenny Burn's program the other day, but I like to put the television on SBS Cycling. And I'll just be walking through the room and you'll hear, Tony Martin's done it again! It's very affirming. Makes me feel very good. But you've got Tony Wilson, you've got Pete Smith, you've got Tony Martin. We've all got other people who share our names. If you want to check your name into, type it into the internet.
The self-search.
It's impossible to find anything.
Mary Jane Fenwick, however.
That's what I'm saying. You could just type
it in. Yeah,
what
there's not
up?
Many Mary Jane. Mary Jane Shoes.
That's
pretty much, and there's a lot of other Mary Jane Fenwicks in Malta, but can't understand any of it because it's all in Maltese. But I'm pretty much one of the only ones. Although I have met another Mary Jane, and because it's not a very common name, when you do meet another Mary Jane, it's a little bit uncomfortable for both of us, especially when they call themselves MJ as well.
Yeah, and of course, often you'll see in like old newsreel documentaries about celebrities in the 50s, in Confidential magazine, he was on the Mary Jane. Robert Mitchum once again battles the Mary Jane.
There are a few songs written about me, Tony Martin.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to get to those.
No, we're not. But I am here for the gig guide.
Oh, yes. Now,
every now and again, Derek lets me on the show.
Okay.
So I'm quite chuffed to be with you guys tonight. So I thought I'd give you a bit of an idea about who's touring this evening, because you can still get along. I know that tickets are still available to see Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah?
No, I'm a big Pavement fan.
Well, and you do know that Pavement are
getting
actually reunited.
Together, yeah.
Now, and that could be actually a very, very special gig. That's on at the Corner Hotel tonight, because a couple of the members of Pavement are actually out here at the moment. So you never know what could happen on stage. Yes, there would be time to get down there at the Corner Hotel. If you're in the area, in Richmond, of course.
Pete Smith was just saying before that music today... isn't like it was in Frank's day, where you got that clarity of sound. And Pete would not be impressed with the Malkmus track that ends with him going, nya, 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 nya,
and it just keeps on going.
Like that.
And there's nothing worse when you're sitting at home and you've forgotten to tell you, what is that noise?
It's Malkmus having fun.
And yet, last evening, I think you played one where somebody rewinds a cassette.
That's right.
I love that number.
Wasn't that great? great.
I love the number. I could have heard it over and over again. Terrific.
That was Justin Hazelwood, the bedroom philosopher, with What Am I Supposed to Be Doing from the album Brown and Orange.
Very catchy. And isn't that what pop music is all about?
It certainly is. What else have you got for us, Mary Jane?
Also on tonight is The Panics. They're out of Perth.
Oh, yes.
You know The Panics.
The Panics, sure.
And they're playing tonight at the Espy in St Kilda, so you might be able to still catch that one as well. And I thought we could hear a Panics track as well.
Have you got one queued up for us?
I do have one queued up. This is Get Us Home. There you go, Pete Smith.
With Get Us Home here on 774 Melbourne and ABC Victoria with Tony Martin and Tony Wilson, and Pete Smith is with us, and Mary Jane Fenwick is here making sure the gig guide goes according to...
And I should mention that people can actually call in.
Oh, with gigs? Of course they can.
I like our producing and presenting.
This is very good. We need some guidance. That's why Pete's here. 1-300-222-774.
So if you've got your own gig to plug and you're not satisfied with what I'm delivering, you are more than welcome to provide your own gig guide.
1-300. I mean, it wasn't like that always. You had to use a proper number. No, 1-300, you know, two black cats and you've paid for the call, you know?
Okay, P. Smith, I have a bone to pick
lollies,
with you.
Lollies, black cats.
Is that a product? I'm not sure if we're...
No, it is, but I won't mention the brand.
No, good on you. Now, look, I've gone to the Internet Movie Database, the single largest site on the internet, I think, and the source to go to for movie credit information. You have 4 acting credits. That's outside of films where you've played yourself, such as Tackle Happy. In 2002...
Was I in that?
You were. You were captured accidentally, actually. I was there. 2002, you played Man in Street in Crackerjack.
Yeah, well, remember that? Was sure. A speaking role.
In 2003, you were the voice of the G'day Show in The Honourable Wally Norman.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Then you were Darcy, of course, in Bad Eggs, also 2003. Mm. And then your most recent screen credit, as I said, in 2006, you were in Kenny... As the radio DJ, just your voice only was heard.
Well, they must have used it without permission because I don't recall that. I saw the movie.
You're in
congratulations,
you're in the credits. It's a massive hit,
it's
Pete.
It's one of the it's a winner. It's made a lot of best Australian comedy for 3 years.
The same
made a lot more money than Bad Eggs, I'll tell you that much.
Stress.
So you should be possibly up for some coin there.
Time's the video shop shut?
You didn't even know. You're so showbiz, you didn't even know that you were in a movie.
No.
Fantastic.
It's lonely at the top.
Can you believe this, Mary Jane?
Cannot believe it. It was quite the performance too, I hear, Pete.
What was that last track you played from the SB? What was the group?
The Panics.
The Panics.
And would they have strings down at the SB tonight? That's what I'd like to know. And would they do a board fade? That was the biggest cop-out in the 60s.
What was
when
that?
When you don't finish a number, you know, with a finish.
Right, right.
Instead of that, your board fade. It's called a board fade, I think, where you fade the one master fader on the board that's got everything.
That actually fades you out as a live band.
They fade you. They fade the whole thing down and out, and that's what happened with that.
Sounds like Pete's
and
disgusted.
That's what happens with a lot of shows. And that's why I'm disgusted with music in the 90s. Hang on, we're in
the 90s.
In the 09s.
Mary Jane Fenwick did point out that you can ring in with your gigs to promote, and we actually have a gig promoter on the line in Peter from Oakley. Are you there?
Good evening. How are you?
Good.
There's a lot of people in there tonight.
It certainly is. It's a full bench. What have you got to add to the mix, Peter?
We have a grand final eve Pie Night Spectacular with Johnny Von Goes hosting, Tracy Harvey assisting.
Mm.
And we have the JVG Guitar Method. Jane Clifton and Billy Miller have worked up some special songs together, which would be great.
Yep.
Nice.
Jack Howard will sing Holy Grail. And we'll have a special performance piece by 1970 Grand Final hero Teddy Hopkins, which will be something special, I think, for tonight.
Ted Hopkins now, he is, of course, the man behind... The group that make all the stats for all the media outlets. So whenever you see numbers pop up on your TV screen whilst watching the football, Teddy Hopkins, the hero of the 1970 Grand Final, is behind all that.
And I'll have me, Trey Raffles, all the handball competitions, all the usual Pie Night stuff. So be a lot of fun, and hope people will get along to support us.
Right, now where and when?
Oakley Bowling Club, Friday night, Doors open 7:30. The barbecue beforehand at 6:30.
All right, well, Peter, thanks for alerting us to that.
It's great. Is the meat is the meat untouched by human hands?
Can't guarantee that.
That's what I want to know.
We'll try and have a confirmation before the end of the broadcast.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Peter. Also, Tara Minton live tonight at Veludo's in St Kilda on Ackland Street. Harp from 9:30. Full jazz band from 10:30. Free entry. That's a pretty good price. Come on down after the Panics. That's what they're suggesting.
A harp. She plays a harp?
Yeah, it's still popular,
you'd
Pete.
Love a harp played popularly, don't you?
Well, don't you? If you do, I do, Pete.
Love it.
Mary Jane, what other gigs do
what
we need
other
to know
gigs?
About?
Now, a band that I don't know if you know of this particular Japanese punk outfit called Shonen Knife, and they're playing with Ouch My Face, and they're playing at the Corner Hotel in Richmond tomorrow night. Now, they haven't come out since 97 for the big day out, and they're sort of people like, you know, Nirvana, and Sonic Youth were big fans of Shonen Knife, and they do a fantastic lot of covers. We might hear from them very soon.
Yeah, I have to just say, look, Pete doesn't he's not really a fan of Shonen Knife. He is a big Ouch My Face buff, though.
He loves and a bit of Ouch My
I've
Face.
I've got to say, on a daily basis, I do a right-hand turn at the Corner Hotel, so there is a bit of a tie-up.
Is there, really? Well, good to know.
You can also check out tomorrow night. You can see the East Brunswick All-Girls Choir, and they're playing at the Workers Club in Fitzroy. And heading on to Friday night, there's plenty on Friday night before our Grand Final Eve. All India Radio are playing at Ya Ya's in Fitzroy. You can also catch Danny Whittacombe, CD launch, along with lovely singer-songwriter Sam Nugent, and they're playing at the band room at the beautiful Wesleyan in Northcote. You can also catch on Friday night the Fire Five, and that's featuring Krista Poliveri and Susanna Espy with Cash Savage and The Last Drinks. And that is in the dining room at the Edinburgh Castle in Brunswick. Also, Weddings, Parties, Anything with Nick Barker and Mark Seymour playing at Billboard in Melbourne.
That'll be the annual weddings gig, I think.
And sold out, we were told the other night.
Oh, okay.
Well, too bad.
So it gets announced here, but it's absolutely
watch them arrive at 7:30.
Are you glad you had me on? Also, at the Gem Hotel in Collingwood, you can catch Nikki Del Rey, Ed Bates, and the Sideshow Brides. And also, if you're in Geelong, it could be a big night on Friday night. Or perhaps it's a quiet night getting ready for Saturday, I'm not sure. But if you're at the National Hotel in Geelong, you can catch Luke Watt, The Half Pints, Stay Down, Blacksmith, Smashed, and Hole in a Shoe.
Wow.
I thought
this
Tony
is a
Martin's
whole new
face.
World is opening up to me.
It's all happening, Pete.
Oh. Tony Martin's face was, what's happening in Geelong on Saturday?
You just wanted to know.
You'll be down there at the Sphinx. I make a regular appearance at the Sphinx in Geelong, and I always like to point out it is the original Sphinx.
Oh, it's bigger than the original Sphinx.
It is. It certainly is.
Wonderful.
Just in case you're up for a bit of a comedy on Friday night and you want to catch a bit more of Tony Wilson, it's the night before that one day in September, and it's a big fun night featuring Judith Lucy, Lawrence Mooney, Emma Race, and of course Tony Wilson, and also hosted by the gorgeous Sam Pang, who is now the host of ADBC, the new quiz show on SBS.
It's on tomorrow night.
Triple R Breakfaster.
You can see me answering not a single question correctly on ADBC tomorrow night on SBS at 8:30. But that
comedy
that is
night,
a great night. I've done one of those.
It's a
great,
lot of fun. I called that one with you there.
And how nerdish was it? Just
you know
how
a lot
much,
about film, don't you?
Only that, but nothing useful. I think you'll find. But whereabouts is it? Tell them where it is.
It's at the Bella Union Bar at Trade Hall in Carlton. That's and it's a really fun night. Yeah. It's tickets on the door, so you've just got to rock up and hope that you can find some standing room. But it is really, really, really fun.
Now, you mentioned Shonen Knife, and we are going to hear some Shonen
now,
Knife.
I could disappoint.
Well, just before we get to that,
okay.
The nightlife is on the way, so we've got nightlife in here as well.
Tony's waiting.
Tony Delroy, what have you got for us this evening after 10?
So is Brendan Favoli going to be at the function?
We got into a lot of trouble speaking about him earlier. It was suggested that we were making fun, but again, I'd like to just read this sentence from the small paper this morning. Favola was seen on the balcony at the River Room where the after party was held, smoking cigarettes in the rain and vomiting. Isn't that a beautiful sentence?
It's a lovely picture, isn't it?
We can't condone that sort of behaviour, but, you know, what a great sentence.
But how do you keep the fags alight when they're wet like that?
That's the sort of talk that got us into trouble. Yes. Tony, what do you? I hope you'll be canvassing this issue with more seriousness than we were.
No, I think we might be passing on that one and just letting Brendan sort his own problems out, I think.
Good on you. It's a hot potato.
Tell me. Dr. Giselle is in tonight. Dr. Giselle Cook. She is from Eastern and Western Medicine, so she is a GP but also a naturopath. And tonight we're having a look at Meniere's disease. I thought it was something you ate, but apparently not. This is something that can often happen later in your life, in your late 40s and beyond, and it can occur at a time when, a lot of things can go wrong for you. Debilitating, hearing loss, tinnitus, vertigo, and it is very, very hard to deal with. It's a sort of a disease of the middle ear. So what we're going to do is talk a little bit about that tonight, but we also are planning to open up for anybody who would like to talk to Dr. Giselle about issues that you've got that you think a natural therapy or an Eastern tradition might be able to assist you with. So that's on the agenda first hour tonight. Young Morris will be joining us from Hollywood, and I've got to say that, Tony, I'm surprised beyond belief.
How?
Well, Pete is going to reveal tonight who is going to play Liberace in the new movie.
Oh, okay, right. Now, am I allowed to spoil the fun?
Yeah.
Because I think I know who it is. Should I say, or is it a bombshell for your program?
Well, I don't know how much of the cast has been revealed. We're planning to reveal some of it, but...
Well, the rumour I heard was that Michael Douglas was going to be playing Liberace. Is that still happening?
That's essentially it, yes. And a very interesting lover as well, another high-profile performer who's going to be involved in that.
Tony also knows about Meniere's disease, if you want him to run through that for a couple of minutes as well.
But hang on, is this a serious...
Slightly delirious after all this.
Is it it's an Oliver Stone film, is it not? Or am I wrong there?
Yeah, no, it is an Oliver Stone movie. I've got to say, just it doesn't...
So they're going to show Liberace's connection with the JFK assassination?
I think that at the grassy knoll.
He was
exactly
the bloke behind it. That's right. Well, that'll be great. Who are you talking to about that?
Peter Morris in Hollywood. Going to be talking. He was at the Emmy Awards on Sunday night, bored rigid, I think. But he's going to be talking a little bit about the 61st annual Primetime Emmys.
And Tony, do you reckon he's going to build up to it as though he's got a big announcement?
Oh, I'm sorry if I...
And yet all of your listeners will know?
No, look, as far as I'm concerned, it's just fine. I mean, it's not exactly a state secret.
There's plenty more on the nightlife than just Liberace talk. Don't worry.
No. We're talking washing machines as well.
Of course you are.
Christopher Zinn is in tonight from Choice, and we're going to point you in the right direction there. The book of the week is about the last 10 years of the productive life of Frederick McCubbin, 1907 to 1917, focused on the landscapes around his home in Mount Macedon and South Yarra, bit of city life and portraits, and 70 works are featured in the book. So that has been selected as the book of the week. So we've got a great challenge for you. Issue, all sorts of bits and pieces, but main go after 10 tonight is alternative therapy and trying to settle your health down.
Well, all the best of luck with that, Tony. You mentioned McCubbin. I know the bloke who actually lives in the house where he did all those paintings.
Talk about hands across the ocean. This is extraordinary. There's connections everywhere. It's 6 degrees of separation. No, 3 degrees
of
separation.
It's the bloke who set up SB Comedy down at the SB. He now lives in that. It's a very odd sort of transplant for him to be living there. Great paintings, and now a man who's created some of the dodgiest comedy gigs I've ever seen lives in that house.
It is the richest tapestry in life.
Thank you,
thanks,
Tony.
Guys. Have a good one.
After 10 on The Nightlife here on 774 at ABC Victoria. Now, Shonen Knife, let's get back there. What track have you selected, Mary Jane?
Now, you'd know this one, Pete, and I'm just not convinced, Pete, you're going to like this one. It's The Carpenters, but just... done Shonen Knife style, top of the world.
Oh, for goodness sake, I had a 78 of this.
You're listening to 774. We like to have a slight gap after everything. It's the ABC way.
Well, that really sunk in, that last promo for me. It left me dumb. And that's the mark of a true promo, I think. A true promo that makes you think. you know, and you want to go on with something else, but you can't because the words are ringing in your ears.
You just need that little pause.
Yeah. And, I love you when you go soft like that. It's lovely. It's great.
You're listening to Tony Martin, Tony Wilson, Pete Smith and Mary Jane Fenwick. We like a full bench in Derek's final
hour.
It
is good fun, isn't it?
Pete, what were you talking about? Was that something libelous that we can't talk about on air?
Not at all. No. You were searching for your headphones and I was just trying to fill the gap.
No, I meant off air. I heard the words Bert Newton mentioned a couple of times.
No, not at all. No. Earlier this evening,
yes,
you were talking about what's the worst thing you ever did, and I think you had to truncate.
We did
have to
truncate the segment. There was trouble.
But I thought, hello, I'll be in there, and they'll ask me what was the worst thing I ever did.
Oh, hang on. You haven't got a disgraceful Favola-style incident.
Well, I don't drink, as you know.
No.
But once, back in the 80s, in Bert's caravan on a very hot afternoon after taping New Faces.
Right.
I did imbibe a half a can of an intoxicating amber fluid.
As I'd like to point out, we do not condone that sort of behaviour here on 774.
But I did tell Bert to get stuffed after that half can.
Oh, did you
and
really?
And I hadn't touched a drop of drink before or since.
Well, so you're a powder keg waiting to go.
I am. And for once, he was lost for words.
Wow, that's the sort of thing that if they had done a longer version of the... Because one of the disappointments for me of seeing The King with Stephen Curry and Sean McCarth, very excellent telemovie
beautiful
about
job
Graham
Stephen
Kennedy.
Did.
Beautiful work, everyone concerned. But you weren't in it. There was nobody playing Peter Smith. I mean, obviously, they had to get a lot in 2 hours.
Oh, absolutely. I thought they did a terrific job. And, I mean, there were so many criticisms about that movie from a lot of my peers who thought that he was hardly done by the depiction was...
Well, what can you do in, really, 90 minutes, let's
exactly,
be honest.
Exactly, and which way can you go? You can go 100 different ways. But and I thought it was a very, you know, pretty honest sort of a depiction of the man and the times.
But you weren't there.
No.
Who would have played you, do you think?
Oh, I think I was...
Oh, you could have done it yourself.
Playing myself, you know. I mean, I've had 4 hair transplants, I think... I could have done the job, don't you, Mary?
Yes, I think you could do the job. A couple of hair transplants and there you go.
That's it. You know, you didn't know, did you? No.
No, not in this lighting. It's very favourable lighting.
But you look out the window as I leave tonight and cross the lonely confines of the Arts Centre and perhaps if there's a bit of a gust, then you may see some remaining traits.
I occasionally bump into Pete in the street and you say that you've been to see your hair guy. And what's the phrase you use?
Maintenance. Hair maintenance.
Had some maintenance done.
I know. I have a hairdresser down in South Yarra, like most of the you know, the people in the area.
Sure.
And a local hairdresser. But I don't have my hair done. I have it maintenance.
Well, of course
it
you
has
do.
To be, it has to be rejigged on a daily basis.
It was interesting to hear that you were a teetotaler. And you've mentioned already that you've had nights with Sammy Davis Jr. doing film trivia, and that you must have been sober
of
the most memorably drunk, the only sober person documenting some of the most memorable nights in history.
What do you think that Sammy Davis Jr. got on the sauce?
No, I'm not insinuating.
I don't think he drank very much either.
Really?
No, I do not. I don't think he. I don't say he was a teetotaler, but I don't think he. No, they didn't hit the grog at all in those days that I know of. That's why it's so foreign to me to hear this business about Brendan
Favola
out on the poop deck at the Crown and.
With soggy cigarettes and...
Well, that's it, soggy cigarettes. And, you know, it's very hard. I mean, I've seen cigarettes left in the men's room in the latrine, which is
no
a disgusting thing to do. And it's so disgusting, that sort of thing, you know. It makes them impossible to relight.
Here we go. I think you have had a few, Pete. Mary Jane, have you ever had people coming on the Fame program at that time in the morning under the weather? Does that ever happen?
On occasion.
Right, don't name any names, obviously.
No, I would never.
Ketones or fresher than that?
Slightly fresher, occasionally. But no, our audience, they're fairly tame at that time of the morning. Have you ever done a graveyard shift?
Yeah, well, I've done midnight to dawn, but you don't get any, no one wants to come in. It's very hard to get a guest for 3 o'clock in the morning.
No, but I've done my fair share of the graveyard shift at various community radio stations, and that's always... a bit of fun and interesting and slightly scary at times as well. But no, the fame program, our listeners are fairly tame, I would say.
Well, no, because when myself and Mick Molloy were doing our show in the 90s, we would be constantly surprised how many pre-recorded interviews we would do at 10:30 in the morning, and the person would be completely drunk. Like, I'm not going to name any names, but there was quite it was in double figures, the number of well-known actors who showed up, you know, straight from somewhere where they've been standing smoking a cigarette in the rain, let's put it that way.
Or, and I've had, you know, I've also seen a couple of, without naming any names as well, but, you know, actors, comedians who come in with a full entourage because perhaps they can't be left alone.
Oh, really?
Mm.
They need supervision.
They need a bit of supervision as well.
Greg Fleet's a bit like that. He often is delivered in a van from somewhere.
And then we love Fleety.
We love Fleety, we certainly do. Now, what other gigs should we be mentioning?
All right, well, Saturday's grand final.
Is it really? Are they persisting with that, Tony?
They are.
And just the weather just sounds dreadful, and it's going to be dreadful for the next couple of days as well. So who knows what's going to happen on Saturday. But if you're still keen and you're heading out, two words for you guys, Wolfmother Frankston at the Pier Hotel. I'm sure that's going to be a big night. And Chicken House at the St. Andrews Hotel in St. Andrews. And Collard Greens and Gravy are playing at the Lomond Hotel in Brunswick East.
I can see what Pete's thinking, and that is what? Wolfmother Frankston. Surely that's three words.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Wolfmother all in one word. I'll show you.
A right-hand turn there.
Proof right here. There you go. Wolfmother, all one word.
I know what Pete's thinking. He's not interested in Wolfmother since they had the lineup change. Because what is left of Wolfmother? Isn't it just the one bloke
now?
It's
the one bloke. He got rid of the band.
I think what finished me with them was when they took the string section out.
That's right. It's never the same. The kazoos, when they lost those.
And also, but that's, there's, you know, there's gigs around town on Saturday night, but if you, I'd say that's, you know, you may have had your barbecue during the day. If you feel like heading out, yeah, there's a couple of good gigs. Also, Sunday, Charles Jenkins is playing at the Pure Pop Courtyard in St Kilda. You can also catch Clinkerfield and the Get Go and Grunt Bucket at the Tote in Collingwood. Also, you can catch Sunday Nights at the Bay, and that features Louis and the Party Boys at the Bay in Mordialloc, the Orb Weavers, and Jane Dust. And Jane Dust is a sensational local singer-songwriter.
Certainly is.
Beautiful voice.
And had an excellent album, which I've forgotten the name of, but it's got a blue cover.
Yes.
It's a blue cover with the word red in the title,
and
I think.
I wish I did know the title of it as well, but she's fantastic live. I have seen her a few times.
And where is Jane appearing again?
So Jane Dust will be at the Wesleyan in Northcote on Sunday, and that's a nice afternoon gig at 5:30.
And Grunt Bucket, where will they be?
Where are Clinkerfield playing?
Clinkerfield is playing with Grunt Bucket.
Yeah.
And that's Wolf at the Mother. Tote.
Do you know that Clinkerfield, who are, you know, they're playing the Tote in Melbourne, and they're a smallish Melbourne band.
Sure.
Nice story about them. They've got a beautiful song called A House Is Not a Home.
Oh, it's a sensational song.
Sensational song. One of my all-time favourite local songs. That was getting played on Triple R Breakfast a few years ago. Spike Jones was in town for the filming of Where the Wild Things Are. Angus Sampson had been a presenter on that breakfast show and got him listening to it. And Clinkerfield ended up and are currently still, I'm sure, on Spike Jonze's iPod.
Wow.
Because he loved that song.
Right. And what about that film you've just mentioned, Where the Wild Things Are? Still no sign of it, I notice. I think it is coming. I've seen a trailer.
You've seen the promo, the trailer.
Yeah.
And you're worried about one thing in that trailer, aren't you?
I did write a thing on the internet about how I think it's always a bad sign when a film promises hope. It was with The Postman with Kevin Costner. He arrives bringing hope. And I see the trailer for Where the Wild Things Are, but I don't want to curse it because it looks pretty interesting.
But the song behind that trailer is fantastic as well.
What is it?
I can't remember.
Helpful.
But why is the film being held up?
It's like an Amnesiacs program tonight. There's an album, I'm not sure what it is.
But
the cover's red. There's another song, we don't know what that's called either.
And I'm not really helping much either. But I was in New York recently, and there's a lot of Where the Wild Things Are T-shirts, books, and things like that. So maybe they're building up the hype. There's kind of a lot of merch. They bring out the book again. even in like clothing stores and cool clothing stores, there's the way the wild things are.
It looks odd. The way I described it was, it looks like David Lynch has directed an episode of The Banana Split. But look, we need to have some music. What have you got for us now, Mary Jane?
I do have for you. Now, Princess 1.5 is playing at the Edinburgh Castle in Brunswick. Lovely singer-songwriter. So I thought we would hear from Princess 1.5 with Turn Around and Thereabouts.
That's Turn Around and Thereabouts by Princess 1.5 from her 2006 album, The Truth. And that was brought in by Mary Jane Fenwick, who's sitting in the
house. I was quite impressed with that back in our
studio. It was almost professional. I'm trying to sound sort of, you know, less shouty than I normally do when I'm on the radio, because it's, I know the ABC listeners are used to Derek Gill's soothing
calm tones.
That's right. And Pete Smith is here too, so I feel slightly intimidated.
Oh, don't be intimidated by me, pal.
And Tony Wilson, because we like a full bench at this time of the night.
And I left a ugly I can't remember in my last factoid about the trailer for Where the Wild Things Are.
Right.
And our producer is just in a jiffy with a flick of her wrist, found that trailer on the internet, and it was Wake Up by Arcade Fire. There is a great track.
Right, and of course Angus Sampson is, I can't see him anywhere in the trailer. Have you done that thing? I've been through sort of freeze-framing the Where the Wild Things Are trailer, and there's no sign of Angus. I don't know what he's doing in that movie.
He's the monster with the big horns, the bull monster, I believe.
So how does that work? Is it his voice?
No, it's not his voice. So he is the physical actor who plays that monster, but they have voices provided by, in the same way as you'd do an animation, even though this is a live-action costume movie.
So and will you be able to, I mean, you're not going to be able to recognise anything of Angus in the film.
It's not sort of like, in some ways, Angus received a huge break. The Angus Sampson, Thank God You're Here, some people may know him from that and would know him from other stuff as well, but the he received a huge break because he now knows Spike Jonze and other people that were involved in making that film. But the average viewer isn't going to know it's Angus. But they cast it really carefully.
See, there was one of those a few years ago on the Australian film Takeaway, where, I swear to you, Michael Veitch played the character of Barry Berge, who's a guy like a sort of burger, a guy in a burger costume for a chain of burger stores. Fictional, I'll point out.
Yeah.
Because we are on the ABC, a genuinely fictional chain. And then he had to go and do something else. So 2 weeks into filming, he was replaced by Peter Rosethorn. So in the movie, you know, Peter Rosethorn will take the head off and you see it's Peter Rosethorn's face. But often it's just Michael Veitch running around in the Barry Berge.
The physical.
But there's no evidence that it's him at all.
It's the same story.
It's the same story.
Different budgets and potentially different audiences.
Now, Tony and I actually worked under the, what's the word, the yoke of Sampson on his first directing job. He made a short film called The Last Supper, which is doing the round of festivals. You make a short film, there's not really anywhere for it to go except for festivals and maybe, if you're lucky, on SBS late at night. And Tony has written a fantastic account of what it's like to work on a film with Angus Sampson and indeed to work on your first screen acting role.
First ever screen acting role. St. Bartholomew I played, who biblical scholars out there would know had zero lines.
And how do you rate your performance?
In the New Testament. I had some rough takes. Angus was, I thought, did an incredibly good job. He relaxed me through the process to the point where I had an almost disembodied moment as the words flowed out of me. I was Bartholomew for a moment, saying two lines more than Bartholomew did in the New Testament.
Well, you have written a fantastic account of that, and you can read it at a website called The Scrivener's Fancy, which is a non-profit website. It's not a commercial venture, and a lot of local comedians and creative writers contribute to it, and that's up there now at thescrivenersfancy.com. But everything stops for the weather. I think we have Scott Williams, senior forecaster. That's senior forecaster down there at the Bureau. Scott, what have you got for us?
Well, it's a fairly quiet night compared to the last two.
Yeah, it's a bit of an anti-climax, isn't it?
That's right, almost. Yeah, just a few showers around Gippsland and around coastal parts of western central Victoria, and otherwise dry and on the coolish side. Most temperatures around the 10 mark at the moment. tomorrow, there's another weak front to slide across the state, particularly the southwestern part, so I think the shower activity will pick up a little bit again in the afternoon. Just a few light showers around the Melbourne area, so not too many here, and probably not getting right up to Mildura. So certainly they'll be mainly in southern areas and around the mountains. Friday, another front. There seems to be one every day, and this time it's a bit more in the way of showers, probably a bit heavier. More risk, I think, of getting some thunderstorms with it. And Saturday behind that, we'll be into some pretty cold air for the footy, so it looks like cold, unstable sort of setup with westerly winds, only expecting around 15 in Melbourne and most centres around Victoria, even less than that. There'll be good snow up in the Alps, but it's not going to help people at the G. I think the longer the game goes, the more likely it is of rain occurring. And that's not just because that's a statistical reality, but I think that the likelihood will peak at the end of the day for showers, and there's even the risk of some small hail or thunder with it. So certainly a one to rug up. And Sunday looks pretty bleak in the wake of the grand final. Win, lose or draw, it's going to be a cold day Sunday with widespread showers in southern areas and still the hail and thunder. So not really clearing, I don't think, until late Monday or into Tuesday. So we'll get a fine spell coming early next week, but after a pretty chilly, wet and cold and windy weekend.
Well, they're tipping not many goals in the grand final anyway, and that weather will actually make it even trickier to score goals, Scott. So thank you very much, Scott Williams, the senior forecaster, the Weather Bureau.
I have to say, football in movies always seems to look better when it's in the rain. Have you noticed that? There'll often be a football scene and it makes for more spectacular footage. Not actually good for the game itself, though?
Well, it often makes for a very exciting game because it's harder to score when the ball's wet. They can't move it as easily, and so therefore the scores are often closer. So it may be a real cliffhanger.
Mm.
Can I ask a silly question?
Do it.
Have they ever called off a game due to really, really horrendous weather?
Yes, they have. Hmm. And now, do you want me to provide a date?
Oh, yes, please.
Sad, sad, sad
no,
man.
No, they haven't. No, I don't know the date.
I love how Pete Smith is. If there's one person in this town who knows less about football than me, I think it's Pete Smith.
Well, I'm a member of the Anti-Football League. That used to be in that small paper.
Right.
In aid of the Anti-Cancer Council, I think it was at the time, with Keith Dunstan.
Have you won that?
And I won that one year. Yes, wow. I did. We used to go onto the MCG and there was an official, you know, ceremony, and you'd either burn a football or stab it or do something, and they raised a lot of money, tongue-in-cheek as it was.
Sure.
But, yes, my name is down there on that honour roll.
It's the person who does the least football in the fairest manner. I like that, the wording of that.
Fantastic. Any other gigs we should be mentioning?
A couple of things that you should know about. Ned Collett and Wirewalker. Ned Collett's a Melbourne singer-songwriter, terrific talent. He's relocating to Europe for a long time. So he's going to be doing some final shows. You do catch him in November at the Northcote Social Club, Friday the 27th of November, just giving you the heads up. And also, organise your tickets for the Stems Farewell Tour. They're playing at the Corner Hotel on Friday, October 9, with the Hoxton Creepers, and I'm a big fan of the Stems, and I don't know if we have time, but
I brought a Stems track in.
Do we have time?
So did I.
Do the maths next door. Do you reckon we do?
Can we fade it out?
All right, well, let's see.
It's a favourite of mine.
All right, the Stems, At First Sight. That is the Stems, At First Sight, here on Evenings with Tony Martin and Tony Wilson, filling in for Derek Gill. It's our final show, filling in for Derek tomorrow, Tony.
Yes.
Yeah, you didn't realise, did you?
I was going to just keep turning up until they got rid of me. But no, we will be here for the last time, 7 till 10 tomorrow night.
That's right. And I think Sam Pang and Lockie Hume will be joining us. Pete Smith, I must thank you for sitting in. Being a treat.
My pleasure, Tony.
And Mary Jane Fenwick, yourself as well.
It's been a lot of fun, guys. Thanks.
And next up, The Nightlife with Tony Delroy. That's coming up after the news.